kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Cole's not here yet. She's a bit busy, but Tim Ekibis, you're here. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm hyped.
I am hyped, too. It is Wrassle Week.
It's not just Wrassle Week. It's Royal Rumble Week.
It is Royal fucking Rumble Week. I am so excited. It is my favorite pay-per-view of the year.
Yeah. Even more than WrestleMania.
Yes, because WrestleMania tends to let me down.
Yeah, well, it's just the Royal Rumble is just always so much fun, no matter what. It's always so much fun, and now they do two of them because they do a lady version and a man version, so you can't go wrong.
And most people thought, oh, man, there's going to be two Rumbles. It's going to wear everyone out, and it didn't. It's just better.
No, it turns out you could just watch Rumbles just all day, really.
they should have a tag team Rumble as well. Fuck it.
Yeah, a tag team Rumble, NXT Rumble, 205 Live Rumble.
Yes.
Just all day.
Think of all the guest entrants they would have.
Yeah, they need to get some because, boy, they couldn't fill them out.
Oh, they could get close.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is Royal Rumble weekend coming up, and we are here for our, what is it, five times a year? What do you call that?
That's I know.
Biannually?
Pentennial.
Pentennial. Our Pentennial Wrasslecast, which I love doing these with you. They're always fun.
Oh, no. Pentennial apparently is every 5 years.
Yeah, then I don't know what to call it.
Wait, okay. Now I'm looking at... Okay, sorry, I Googled now. I'm seeing quinquennial versus pentennial.
What is quinquennial?
Is that quinquennial is that happens every 5 years, while pentennial is that occurs every 5 years. That's the same thing.
The fuck is the difference?
That's the same thing. This is a bad page.
Thanks, Google. Okay.
Five times a year word. No, not every 5 years. Okay, well, that's a lost cause, too. My webcam and this word.
Your webcam's not working.
Slightly more than quarterly.
Trivium Champ is dropping into the chat, dropping 100 biddies, so thanks to him. That is awesome.
Woo!
And I just noticed that the little notice that pops up saying that someone dropped bits goes right over where your name is in the screen.
Yeah, throw your bits at my face.
Yes. Just cover you in bits.
We got a lot to talk about.
Dropping bits. Yes, we do. We do this five times a year because it is all of the Tim Ekibits.
Rain my Tim Ekibits.
Thanks, Eternal, chiming in with that. So yeah, she is around. She doesn't care about wrestling, so she's not on this part of the show.
Sure.
But, five times a year, they have NXT takeovers.
Yeah.
And, we are on here to discuss Takeover and the Royal Rumble because two pay-per-views are better than one.
Yep.
And takeovers are always good.
They are never been a bad one.
There hasn't.
There hasn't. There's been some where they're pretty much just always great. Like,
yeah.
I always kind of like, yeah.
There might be some where a match is just good instead of great.
Yeah, I can't really think of a stinker takeover match. Usually just like the atmosphere and the effort is there, even if you're hyped for the match. Might not necessarily be there with it, but it's fine.
Papa H is bringing the quality with NXT.
Yeah, so let's get into it.
Let us get in. I got to admit, I am behind on the weekly television, but it doesn't matter because it's TakeOver, and they recap everything anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, most of the matches were set like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's not like there's weekly stories you have to keep up with NXT. They, you know, people will show up once a month or something.
Yeah, it's great.
So, yeah, let's start off with NXT TakeOver Phoenix. We're just going off the Wikipedia pages. I'm going to start at the bottom, work my way up, and pretend that that's the order that they're going to be in on pay-per-view. But I'm sure they're going to be completely wrong, just like all of our guesses.
Yep.
We should keep track of our guesses this time.
All right. Yeah. I will pull my notebook here in front of me. I will pull a pen out of my drawer. It's a fresh pen, so there's like a little thing at the end of it to keep the ink in check. All right. Now I'm ready to write.
You took the pen condom off?
Yep, I took the pen condom off.
All right, nice. First match is Matt Riddle versus Cassius Ohno. We saw this on the last TakeOver in about 30 seconds.
Which is really funny because it wasn't officially listed on the last TakeOver, but like everyone and their mom was like, oh, there's going to be a Ohno-Riddle match, right? Right?
And yeah, now they're doing it for real.
I guess, yeah, not for play.
Who do you think is taking this one?
Wow, I think it's still Matt Riddle.
We are in agreement.
This has come about as they had another match on like the New Year's Eve show or like the Christmas week show or something like that. It was like the year recap show, and this was the only match on the show. And Matt Riddle won, but then Cassius Ohno beat him up after the match. So Matt Riddle's already like 2-0, but I mean, Cassius Ohno is there to be beaten by guys like Matt Riddle. So
Cassius
still,
Ohno is the gatekeeper of NXT.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, oh no. It's Matt Riddle. Cassius Ohno should never win a match on a takeover. Really.
That's
sorry.
The new streak.
Yeah, like
him and Kurt Hawkins are going to go at it and the ring's going to implode.
Oh god. Yeah. Yeah.
So Matt Riddle seems to be taking this one fairly easily in our minds.
Yeah, then not really much to say about that one. This one that's like your opener, I'm sure. And then we'll move on to the title matches.
Yeah, really. They are all title matches.
Now that they have another title, yeah.
Yeah, so next match on Wikipedia claims it is going to be Ricochet, the NXT North American champion, taking on Johnny Gargano. What do you think of this one?
Oh, man, this is where things get interesting. One of the things I like about NXT is I always feel like I have an easy time seeing how a story could go both ways. Like usually with main roster matches, you're kind of like you sense how things are going, or whether it's the right time that they're gonna have a belt change hands or whatever. But a lot of times, just I think with the storylines on NXT, it's hard to guess what direction they're gonna go in, and I think, if you were to look back at however long we've been doing these predictions, my NXT predictions have probably been way worse than my main roster ones.
Probably.
That's why we're keeping track this time. Other than Survivor Series, where the main roster just decided to have Raw win everything.
Yeah.
Except for that tag match, which they just decided to forget about. So we have Ricochet, your champion, going up against being challenged by Johnny Gargano, who's being mind controlled by Tommaso Ciampa into going after a different title that is not his own.
Mind controlled.
He is, man. He like mind tricked him in the cage match against Aleister Black into doing the DIY finisher.
I love when he was doing that and Johnny Gargano was looking at his arms like, what the hell is happening to me?
Yeah. It's like Johnny refuses to acknowledge like how much of a hold Ciampa has over him. At this point, and this is actually the Royal Rumble pay-per-view marks a year since Ciampa came back, and that this thing really started again in earnest, which is crazy. Still like the A storyline of the show. I'm kind of inclined to think I can see it going either way. I could see Ricochet just winning because he's Ricochet and he's awesome, and Johnny just not being able to pull it off because he's giving in too much to these evil tendencies. He's not like full Johnny wrestling right now, still under the influence of Tommaso Ciampa. But also you could just see Johnny cheating to win at the same time and them both having titles. But I think Ricochet wins. I think Ricochet retains.
That's who I've got written down as well. I think Johnny Gargano, he's not going to get a belt until the Tommaso Ciampa thing comes full circle and they end up going at it and Johnny Gargano wins his title.
Yeah. Yeah. That feels likely. I agree.
Cool. So we're in agreement on two matches so far.
So far, so good.
Next up is the Undisputed Era, Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong taking on the War Raiders. I think the champions are going to retain again. I think, and unless they're getting called up, which I don't think is going to happen until after Mania, I think they're going to keep the belts on the Undisputed Era, and there's going to be shenanigans with the rest of the crew.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. They've made much ado about this claim by Adam Cole that the Undisputed Era is going to be draped in gold in 2019. So one would expect at some point that they're all going to have belts.
Which would be cool as hell.
which they did, you know, for a period last year while Adam Cole was the inaugural North American champion, but not so much since then. I guess they've kind of codified the Undisputed Era tag team as being O'Reilly and Strong. I wouldn't mind if they
went back to the Freebird.
Well, did a Freebird rule and just threw in, either one of them, really. I mean, because neither Cole nor Fish are on the card. You got to feel kind of bad for Bobby Fish, who, like, got hurt and kind of lost his spot in this whole thing and is just now getting back into action. But, yeah, I think it makes sense for the Undisputed Era to hang on. I feel like this is War Raider's second challenge. I feel like they had a challenge on NXT TV and it might have gotten thrown out. And that is, like, so at some point before War Games, you know? I think, at the very least, I think the chase continues for another cycle here. The Undisputed Era retains.
So we are 3-for-3 in agreement.
Yep. Yeah.
I have a feeling that we're going to be agreeing a lot on this card.
Yeah. Yeah. And then maybe we'll be wrong a bunch because.
Probably.
That's the way it goes.
Because it's us and we're wrong.
Yep.
So next up is Shayna Baszler and Bianca Belair. What do you think on this one?
Oh, man, this is tough. This is tougher, I think. Because I think in the past, at least maybe more around SummerSlam, there was just much ado about, like, when is Baszler going to move up to the main roster? You know, she's been around on NXT for a little over a year now. And is that time soon? It's tough to see any more call-ups happening soon, just given the fact that there's six that just happened, you know?
Yeah. That are still happening. We still don't know where the hell they're going to be.
Yeah, so, and Bianca Belair is awesome, one, and she is also undefeated. Undefeated.
Really?
Yeah, that's her whole thing. That's her catchphrase that I did. Undefeated.
See, this is what happens when I miss weekly television.
Dude, you've been missing weekly television for like 3 months. She's been spouting this like for a long time.
What can I say? I'm behind.
So it's tough to see Shayna losing just because Bianca isn't like this is her first challenge, her first title challenge, which is fine and great. But she's hasn't really. I don't really think there's been like a strong, like she's been playing more of like a heel, more of a tweener at the very best. Like, and Shayna's such a dick that I feel like, you know, you need like more of a goody two shoes baby face to win and take the title off of her. So I am inclined to believe that Shayna retains again here, possibly through continued shenanigans from her cohorts there.
From the horsewomen.
The horsewomen, yeah.
Yeah, I'm agreement. Once again, I'm in agreement. I think Shane is going to hold on to it. I just don't think Bianca Belair is, I don't know, a big enough name, if you want to put it that way, to take the title.
Yeah, I guess. It feels like, you know, that title is in Io Shirai's future, mm-hmm. It feels like. But, yeah. But, yeah, it's because I could also, because the thing is, I could see Shayna getting involved in the whatever Ronda Rousey storyline happens ahead of Mania. But also I could see them waiting until after Mania to call her up because they just called up six people. So, yeah. You know, I see a lot kind of staying in place until WrestleMania. But again, I wouldn't be surprised. Like the tag match, I feel pretty confident about, but this one I could kind of see going either way, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought she was going to win at Brooklyn and she lost. So
I guess we'll find out in a couple of days.
Yep. Yeah.
And the headliner of NXT TakeOver Phoenix, Tommaso Ciampa versus Aleister Black. Aleister Black getting his main event to try and win his belt back. I think Ciampa's going to hold on to it, though.
I think Ciampa's going to hold on to it as well. The only scenario I could see is they do like a flippy floppy where Black wins it back and then Ciampa wins it back at the next TakeOver. But I feel like this is getting this match out of the way, getting Aleister Black's rematch out of the way after his unfortunate injury over the summer. And I don't know, possibly he shows up at some event the next night.
I could see Black getting a call up.
I think Black is well overdue for the call up. And I could definitely see him popping up in the Royal Rumble. Like, I feel like he's pretty much done everything at NXT. So maybe he just hangs around for like a couple more matches, like loses a match to Johnny, and then, you know, is permanent main roster. But yeah, I think champions pretty much retain on this show up and down the board.
We are in agreement on the entire TakeOver card.
Yeah.
So we are going to be wrong on all of the matches.
Some of them, and at least one, we are not going to be correct. But it's fun. It's fun to be wrong.
For it is. Sure. Yeah. It's the surprise of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I would love to see Black show up during the Rumble. We'll get to this more later on, but just hearing that guitar riff hit right after the buzzer, I think the crowd would lose their shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if anything, maybe he'll just get like a cameo, you know, like how Andrade was in the Royal Rumble last year. The Andrade no last name nickname man.
Yeah. Poor guy. Poor Andrade.
Poor Andrade.
No more CN.
No more Almas. Simply Andrade.
Oh, it's like Rusev all over again.
Yeah, Alexander and Antonio and Langston. All those guys.
WWE hates names.
Adrian.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hate you having more than one name. Hate it.
Oh, well, but yeah, TakeOver looks pretty awesome. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, should be. I mean, it's looking like a great weekend because the Royal Rumble also has a hell of a card that's kind of sneakily came together.
It looks like a fantastic card, and I know that Wikipedia doesn't have them in the proper order since number 4 on their list is a pre-show match.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that before. Yeah, we'll put that. We'll talk about that. We should might as well talk about it first because I'm sure it'll be the first fucking match because it's the Cruiserweight match.
Yeah, pretty much. Fatal 4-Way for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Buddy Murphy, the champion, defending against Akira Tozawa, Hideo Itami, and Kalisto. Where do you see this one going?
I think that, I mean, this should be a banger of a match. They got a lot of talent in that ring. But I feel like just with the way things go on 205 Live, I can't see Buddy Murphy losing in a fatal four-way, which is like reverse psychology from the main roster where you're like, oh, it's a fatal four-way. It's the perfect opportunity for the champion to lose and not get pinned. But I think in this case, like the way that they kind of build their shows and matches, it feels like, no, they want him to lose. The Cruiserweight Championship is meant to be won and lost in one-on-one matches. So I think this will be a really fun pre-show match, but I think Buddy Murphy retains.
I'm going with Hideo Itami. I think he's languished so much that he deserves something.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree that he might be the next Cruiserweight champion. I just don't think it'll be at the Royal Rumble.
Well, it's good that we're finally disagreeing on something.
Yeah.
We're I think Hideo's floundered, and I think it's his time. He deserves a belt because I think if he doesn't get some kind of recognition, he's going to just bolt the fuck out of WWE sooner or later.
Yeah.
He's going to pull a Neville and just be like, I'm sick of this shit. Peace.
Yeah, maybe. Well, we'll see. But
yeah, we will see. Next up, Rusev, the champion, WWE United States champion, defending against Shinsuke Nakamura. I think Nakamura is going to take the belt back. I think Rusev had his day in the sun on that on the taped episode of SmackDown.
I can't believe you put it like that.
His Rusev day in the sun.
Oh, God, that's terrible. It's funny. They said that they're not doing rematches anymore, but boy, there sure is some rematches on this very show. I think Rusev retains here. You know, Nakamura was champion for quite a while and didn't really do anything with him, you know?
Yeah.
It was an extremely forgettable run. It felt like they just kind of put the title on him to be like, well, you're Shinsuke Nakamura, and you're awesome. Oh, my God. Last year, Shinsuke Nakamura won the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
This year, he is on the pre-show challenging for the United States title, which he lost, you know?
On a taped episode of SmackDown.
On a taped episode of SmackDown.
Not even live.
But it still fell on Rusev Day, so the magic came through. I just already feel like Shinsuke is such an afterthought in the WWE.
I think that's why I'm pulling for him to win it, because he, you know, he deserves more. It's like a Tommy. I want to see Nakamura actually succeed and do well in the company.
Yeah.
and not just flounder. And I think after his lackluster championship run, I think he's going to get another shot at it.
Deserves more? Like a WWE championship? Wouldn't you want to see him wrestle against the new Daniel Bryan?
Maybe.
That
would be an awesome match.
Wouldn't it, though? But now you'd rather have him be United States champion, I guess. Sure, whatever. Well,
until after Mania.
Mania. I think Rusev retains. Yeah, that's what I think. Rusev retains.
But that is the pre-show. A good pre-show.
Not bad. Yeah.
And then the main card. This main card.
Yeah.
Starting things off, SmackDown Tag Team Championship is going to be defended by The Bar against The Miz and Shane McMahon. Where do you see this one going?
Well, I mean, Shane McMahon is the greatest wrestler in the world, right? So they have to win, right?
And The Miz is two-thirds of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Or the greatest in the world, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah. I guess really the question is, does The Miz turn on Shane McMahon here, or do they win the titles and then he turns on him later? That is the question, right? Right?
I'm going with they're going to win the titles.
I'm kind of thinking they're going to win the titles, too, which is unfortunate because Cesaro and Sheamus are great. The Bar is great, but... I feel like for the necessity of wherever this Miz Shane McMahon storyline is going, they need to win the titles.
Yeah.
I am with you on that. I mean, it's such a weird thing that's going on with them. I just don't quite understand. But it seems like it's probably headed to a WrestleMania match between the two of them. Seems like they're going to... that they have to win the titles and be champions for a little while. And then lose them and then build that's kind of where I feel it's headed. I could also very easily see them losing and The Miz like losing his shit on Shane McMahon, and then Shane's out for a little while and then comes back and then they set up the match for Mania. But yeah, I'm with you on this one.
What if it goes the other way? What if they lose and Shane turns on The Miz?
I prefer that because Shane is a dick. The Miz is awesome.
And The Miz has been getting some good reactions lately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would love that. I would prefer that to any scenario, but I feel like they're headed for the titles at the moment, just like you do.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But next up, we got the women's championship matches, Raw Women's Championship, Ronda Rousey versus Sasha Banks. I think Rousey's keeping it.
Yeah.
I think she's not losing till Mania.
Yep. Yeah, should be a great match. Sasha is great. I am glad she got to be in a title match on a pay-per-view again. But it seems like, I mean, also it's that her and Bayley seem more destined to be
the tag team champs,
or at least hotly competing for them.
Yeah.
Either the first ones or they'll be challenging for them at WrestleMania one way or the other. This just seems like a bump in the road for old rowdy Ronda. Champion retains faux show. There's there's probably a couple picks that I feel pretty strong about on this card, but that's definitely one of them.
Oh yeah. I don't see them pulling a swerve with Rousey. I think Mania is when they're going to have the big three-way. But yeah, I think she's easily keeping her belt. And speaking of tag teams, where the hell's the Raw tag teams?
Do we really want to talk about that division? Do we need to talk about that division? Is there anything to say about that division?
The only thing I could say about that division is I can't remember who the champs are.
Well, it's Chad Gable and Bob Roode.
Oh, that's right.
And the main storyline just seems to be them embarrassing the Revival week after week after week.
Revival.
They are so fucking good and they are so fucking wasted on that show. And I don't know, supposedly the storyline is going somewhere, but it just seems to be dead set on making them look stupid on a weekly basis. And it,
people think it's going to lead to the Revival taking on Hawkins and Ryder, and Ryder ending his losing streak against the Revival.
Yeah, no, I mean, that seems, I believe that. That they're, I don't know, it
just to fuck with the Revival for asking for their release.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, and this might not be the first time this comes up, is there's if you have not heard, there is a new promotion that's being started up by a one Cody Rhodes and his best friends, the Young Bucks, called All Elite Wrestling. And months ago, like, the Young Bucks and their rival tweeted about wrestling each other someday. So there is the feeling that unless WWE does something with the revival, that they're just going to make the revival stay, that they're just going to job them out and try to make them look bad before they leave.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, and bah.
Anyway, the other women's championship, the SmackDown Women's Championship, Asuka taking on Becky Lynch. Where do you see this one going?
Uh-huh. Now things get interesting, right?
They do.
They do, because Becky Lynch is the man. And it seems, it would seem, for all intents and purposes, that Becky Lynch is set to be involved in some kind of a match at WrestleMania with Rowdy Ronda Rousey, right? It would seem that way. Yet here she is in this match against Asuka. It would have seemed like the triple threat at TLC last month was meant to just have Becky lose her belt so that she could be in the Rumble and win the Rumble and move on to WrestleMania without, you know, the having to have a belt on her. You know, this is belt losing season.
Yeah.
Lose your belt so you can win the Royal Rumble and move on to Mania. So what happens here? It's tough to see Asuka just winning, right? I mean, not in the sense that, like, Asuka can't beat the crap out of Becky Lynch, because Asuka's amazing and Asuka's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But just with kind of where Becky Lynch is at as a character, it's tough to see her just losing a match clean to Asuka. So I am inclined to believe that there will be some kind of shenanigans to
Yay,
cause
shenanigans.
Becky to lose. I see shenanigans ending this match in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if Charlotte's going to get involved. I don't know if Ronda's going to get involved. I don't know if Ronda's cronies are going to get involved. But I think Asuka wins, but I think it's because there are some kind of a run-in to disrupt Becky. Or maybe the match ends in, like, a DQ, gets thrown out, you know?
But, yeah, but we got to pick a winner. We can't just pick a throw-out.
I know. I would say,
I mean, we could, but that's taking the cheap way out.
I would say Asuka leaves the match as champion.
You go. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I have Asuka as well, retaining in some form or fashion. Charlotte shenanigans seems like it could be a real possibility. Sharnanigans, if you will.
Yeah, she was involved in their show opening promo business on this past week's SmackDown. So, you know, it's a possibility.
But then you also have the possibility, are they going to put the belt back on Becky Lynch and then have Charlotte win the Rumble, which, again, we'll get to in a few minutes.
We'll see.
Them fighting over who's going to fight Rousey at Mania and then have the triple threat set up that way.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there, I guess.
We'll get there. The WWE Championship, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. These guys can't put on a bad match.
I don't think they can. With Daniel Bryan involved, AJ Styles has put on some weird matches over the course of the last year sometimes. But I think in each other's company, it's going to be great. And I think Daniel Bryan is going to retain. I don't see why he would lose here.
I agree. I don't have much else to put there besides it's going to be a great match, and I see Daniel Bryan keeping it.
Yeah, it's a rematch, you know. I'm trying to think. They did wrestle last. Did they wrestle at TLC? They must have. Yeah, I just see Daniel Bryan retaining at least until WrestleMania. AJ had the freaking title for like a year, so what else are you gonna do with him in the title right now? Speaking of guys that hold on to their titles for way too long.
I'm trying to look up and see. Yeah, Daniel Bryan defeated AJ Styles at TLC.
Yeah, he did beat him at TLC, but he won the belt like before Survivor Series on TV.
That's
right. With a kick to the old junk.
The family jewels.
Yes.
You'd think AJ Styles would learn to wear a goddamn cup.
You'd think everybody involved in this contact sport would wear a cup. You think they don't wear cups in football, basketball, etc.? No, they all wear cups.
After everything he went through with Nakamura, knocking him in the balls so much, and then happening with Daniel Bryan, you'd think he would learn his lesson.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, when you're wearing a cup and you get kicked in the balls, it still hurts. Oh, yeah. So,
UFC is proof of that.
Yeah. 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 Woo.
But yeah, no. Daniel Bryan looks like the SmackDown champs are retaining. We agree on those.
Just keeps you from dying, really.
Just fall over dead from your balls. Mm-hmm. Next match is, I think this is where things get interesting. It's a tale of two matches, Brock Lesnar and Finn Balor for the Universal Championship.
Finally, Finn gets his rematch.
I think this all comes down to one aspect.
Yeah.
Which Finn are we getting?
I saw an article that said not to expect the demon, which is nonsense, because under what condition would Finn Balor not bring out the demon against Brock fucking Lesnar?
For real. Like, if there's a chance, if there's any time to be the demon, it's against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And I think if Finn Balor comes out as the demon, he's leaving as champion.
I think he still loses.
Do you?
But, yep. Yeah.
You think they sacrifice the demon to Lesnar?
If they, I think they could get away with it, but if they're trepidatious about bringing out that thing, then it's because they know Finn is gonna lose.
Yeah.
I mean, like, remember this match was Brock against Braun, which is going to be the third time, and apparently they didn't have any intention of having Braun. Poor Braun Strowman. What the hell happened to that man?
Seriously.
Oh my God, he was like the coolest thing on the planet, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, and just like in the last 6-7 months, he has taken such a nosedive. I think it's just like too many losses to Brock Lesnar, too much just like dicking around and not pulling a trigger on him.
Too many promos. Braun is not a talker. Just let him beat the shit out of people.
Yeah, like they did the weird heel turn thing with
Ziggler and McIntyre
for like a couple months, and just like
that was a wet fart of a heel
came
turn.
Out of it looking bad. You know, his arm was hurt. And yeah, he's just been in it. It just not looked good recently. So, I mean, it's kind of good that they took him out of this match for that sake. Like, if he lost to Brock again, like, it's just...
It's over for him, yeah.
It would have been over. I mean, I really think the time to pull the trigger on him was, like, at SummerSlam 2017 when they had that Fatal 4-Way match. And, like, people were just going nuts for him. But Brock retained... but even like Shocker. The singles match after that, like Brock retained, just beat him up. He got all tired and sad looking and lost. And just like that, like somewhere in there, like between that SummerSlam and last year's WrestleMania, like was the opportunity with Braun Strowman. And it feels like they missed it and it sucks. But this match, hey, Finn gets his match against Brock Lesnar.
Yay!
This match should be a blast. There's going to be, Brock Lesnar's going to beat the shit out of him. The announcer's going to be like, oh, somebody's got to stop this. This is just too, some, this is, we're well, talking
someone
about.
Someone stop the damn match already.
We're talking about a man's career here, you know, this, just end it, Brock. This is, and then, you know, Finn will have his big comeback. It'll probably follow the template of, like, the AJ Styles Brock Lesnar matches, the Daniel Bryan Brock Lesnar match. Apparently Brock Lesnar asked for this match. He wanted to wrestle Finn. So that bodes well that he's going to show up with his working boots. I think he seems to like working against these small guys in these, David versus Goliath match. So it's good. It's exciting. It's cool for Finn to get that spot, but I think Brock retains and is going to hang on to it presumably till WrestleMania, unless, he's supposedly coming back to the UFC and, I don't know. It was weird when he won the title again in that show in that country that will not be referred to, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was
the AJ Styles ball sack, the crown jewels.
Yeah, but back in the crown jewels, I thought I was, yeah, just people keep thinking that it's the end of his run, like, and he just keeps retaining and just keeps retaining. But I think probably at WrestleMania, his days are numbered.
Yeah. Against Roman Reigns.
Yeah, returning Roman Reigns. I mean, that you want to talk about a fucking awesome surprise Royal Rumble entrance.
Oh my God, that pop would blow the roof off the fucking building.
That would be insane.
Banny.
What a contrast, like Roman coming out number 30 in this Rumble versus...
oh my God. Against what, like 2-3 years ago he came out and it was just booze?
Yeah, it was just...
He's alive!
Yeah, that would be incredible, but I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But
it would be But it would be amazing.
I really do think this comes down to whether or not Finn Balor comes out as the demon. If he comes out as the demon, I think he wins it. If he doesn't come out as the demon, he's getting his ass kicked.
I mean, that would be awesome. Demon Finn Balor beats Brock Lesnar. I'm totally down for that.
And we need more demon. It used to be every takeover he'd be the demon, and it was awesome. And now it's like once a year he's the demon.
I brought it out to beat up Baron Corbin
of all people.
It was great.
It was amazing.
I like that they're using it sparingly. Like, it's still like, I mean, I don't know.
They could use it a bit more.
They could use Finn a bit more, himself a bit more.
Well, apparently Vince is looking to push him again. Who knows if it's going to happen or not.
They can get him into a good rhythm. Like, you know, he loses this match, get him involved with the Intercontinental title. I think he'd be great in that position. Oh, that's right. Booty Bobby Lashley's got that thing right now. I forgot.
Yeah, no match for him either. Just the Rumble.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Rumbles.
Speaking of women's Royal Rumble match, 30 woman Royal Rumble match for a chance at the women's championship at WrestleMania. I feel like we can't really do predictions on these and have them be accurate because there's too many variables. So I say these are just free picks.
Well, you know, I don't agree with you.
No.
Okay. Well, first thing, they've announced most of the entrants to the women's Royal Rumble. Who do you see? I mean, Lacey Evans is going to be in it now. Obviously, we know that. And Nikki Cross. What do you see for surprise entrants in this? Any predictions for those? They got about like 5 or 6 slots to fill with surprises.
I think Trish shows up again. I think Lita shows up again.
Yeah, okay. I think you might see Bianca Belair. I'm trying to think anyone else from NXT that might show up. Maybe you'd see Shayna here. I don't know. Because Ember Moon was in last year's Women's Royal Rumble as the NXT champion. Seems like Michelle McCool is someone they like to pull out a lot.
True.
I
would have said Nikki Cross as a surprise entrant, but she's already there.
Yeah, she's on the list. So, all right, I can scroll down and see them on this Wikipedia page.
You could see 23 of the 30 on Wikipedia. I'm
trying to think. Well, like, they said Bliss is in. I don't think there's anybody else out with injury that it makes sense. A winner. A winner of the match. Well, it's either Charlotte or it's Becky Lynch. Right?
Well, Becky's not officially in it, so she could be a surprise entrant,
too. She could be a surprise entrant, yeah. And I feel like she will be. You know, the smart money that everybody seems to know is happening is that Charlotte and or Becky Lynch are going to be wrestling Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. I think most people would prefer it to be Becky Lynch versus Rousey one-on-one, but everyone kind of knows how the WWE is and that they are going to want to try to make it a triple threat match, you know?
Yeah.
I would personally prefer to see Charlotte challenging Asuka and do that rematch at WrestleMania. I think that would be fantastic.
It would.
So how do they make this go down to have them both challenge at WrestleMania? Is it a thing where, you know, Becky can't enter the Rumble or, you know, so yeah, Charlotte, maybe she comes out, she ruins Becky's match against Asuka. Becky can't compete in the Rumble. And then Charlotte wins the Rumble and Becky comes out and is like, well, you screwed me over. So I deserve, you know, you should put your shot on the line, and then they have some triple threat match at Elimination Fastlane or whatever. And, you know, then maybe that gets mucked up and someone's just like, we'll put them both in the match. I just wish that they would just do the thing that makes fucking sense and have Becky Lynch win the goddamn Rumble. Just that's it. I'm also afraid of them doing a thing where they like both get eliminated at the same time. And I just
throw votes.
And I hope they don't try to do that because that always ends up a disaster because it is so hard to do. Because eventually you start looking at the replays and you're like, okay, well, that person hit the ground first. It is so hard. They shouldn't ever rely on that finish ever again.
Will eventually.
But I think Becky should win the Royal Rumble. It's her, Charlotte, for sure. That seems obvious. But it might be dictated by how the Lynch match goes earlier on in the show. But I just think they need to like learn from their experience of that year when Daniel Bryan wasn't even in the Rumble, you know, the year of WrestleMania 30, when the entire WWE universe knew who they wanted to win the Rumble, was chanting for Daniel Bryan as it counted down to number 30, and then they got
Rey Mysterio. Booyaka.
And yeah, it was a disaster that they had to unfuck. I hope they've learned from that. I hope they just do the straightforward, the right thing, you know, have Charlotte weasel her way into the match later on if you want to go that route, but have Becky win the goddamn Rumble. God damn it. Charlotte can win next year's. There will be plenty of opportunities for Charlotte to win the Rumble. Now is the time when Becky needs to. Don't fuck this up. It's easy.
If you're forcing me to pick someone for a prediction here, I'm going to go outside of your box. I think they're going to find a way to get Charlotte and Becky against Rousey in a different way. And they're going to find a way to just give it to Alexa Bliss because they give everything to Alexa Bliss.
Huh. All right. Yeah, I was wondering if there would be like a, if there was, the dark horse is whoever is going to challenge Asuka, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the dark horse. And it's that, that's not a bad dark horse pick, I think. Cause I don't know who else they would have do it from the SmackDown roster. Maybe builds, well, you know what? They could build something with Naomi because they were tag team partners, you know?
Yeah.
So, but also Naomi wrestled Asuka like the night after she won the thing. So,
well, I still think they give everything to Bliss. So Royal Rumble champion sounds like another title that she's going to get and not really deserve.
I don't know. I have no beef with Alexa Bliss. I think
I think it's cooled down a bit. There was a stretch when she was involved in every championship match that was she was turning into the Roman Reigns of the women's division.
Well, she kind of flipped from she was being champion of SmackDown to being champion of Raw all the time. And
yeah,
I think a lot of people don't think she deserved it. But I think the problem where I might see her not winning the Rumble is just that she's had injury problems. She's just coming back from injury. I think they might be a little hesitant to pull the trigger on something with her just yet.
But she's blonde. But
she is blonde. Maybe they got Ember Moon win and challenge Asuka. That would be awesome.
I think we can agree as long as it's not Nia Jax.
I don't think it'll be Nia Jax.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I am so tired of Nia Jax. She is dangerous. She's a shitty wrestler. She has no personality. She's just not good. Oh, you.
Oh, you.
Final match of the night, the Men's Royal Rumble. Well, presumably the final match of the night. Maybe they'll swerve us and give us the women's as the headliner
again. I think the women's will be the last one.
You think so again?
Yep.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. That would be weird if the women's match went on before the title match. I don't think that's going to happen, but that would be weird. The women's title match, because I feel like the women's title match kind of plays into whatever happens in the Women's Royal Rumble in some way.
True.
Maybe it doesn't, or maybe vice versa. Now you got me thinking.
Yeah.
It's an exciting night. Who knows what's going
to
happen?
Card subject to change. So
yeah.
Men's Royal Rumble match. Who do you think is taking home the Men's Royal Rumble?
I mean, it's kind of a safe pick, but it's looking like, my pick is Seth freaking Rollins. I feel like it is his time to, like, he had a hell of a 2018. Like, that dude wrestled his ass off for the entire year until that shitty match with Dean Ambrose last month, but like, other than that, he was having awesome matches the whole way around. Like, the crowd is super behind him. I think he goes on to wrestle Lesnar at WrestleMania.
That's a good pick.
I think it's him, or I think it's Drew McIntyre.
I have two picks, one for Raw, one for SmackDown.
I also have a SmackDown pick.
Who's your SmackDown pick?
Well, I should say I have two SmackDown picks. I think I could see Rey Mysterio.
Booyaka, booyaka.
Or if they really want to come out of left field, they're going to have Mustafa Ali win.
I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah? No. Too far out of left field?
I think that's too far.
Far. All right.
My two picks, Raw, I think it's going to be Drew McIntyre if a Raw person wins.
Okay.
SmackDown, I'm going to go Samoa Joe.
Yeah? Samoa Joe. We need Samoa
Joe
in here.
Joe.
So you see a definite heel winner this year.
I think so. I would love to see Samoa Joe win the Rumble. I love Samoa Joe.
Yeah,
and not just because we have the same name.
you are not Samoan. You are not a Samoan Joe.
I'm Italian Joe.
You're Pennsylvania Joe.
Pennsylvania Joe.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that, yeah, Mustafa might be a little out of left field. I feel like the final four, you're probably looking at Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Rey Mysterio, and Andrade. I could see him being in there at the very end. Like, he's been very prominent on TV lately.
He has.
Yeah, I don't want to see Randy Orton in there at the end. John Cena is apparently not competing in the Rumble.
He's still listed on Wikipedia, but yeah, I'm hearing the rumblings too that he has a fake injury that's going to keep him out of the Rumble.
Yeah, like he's filming a movie. I've heard much ado rumors about this, that, and the other thing, you know.
So bait and switch that shit.
Yeah. It's... Yeah, it seems like Drew or Seth. That seems like the top two picks, and that SmackDown's going to settle. And then... Well, because in that scenario, that, well, I guess you, because I see someone from SmackDown winning the Women's Rumble, and I see someone from Raw winning the Men's Rumble.
And I see it the other way around.
You see it the other way around.
Well, I could see Drew winning as well. Drew's my main pick, and then Samoa Joe if a SmackDown person wins.
Yeah, I think Drew is a strong contender. It's just a matter of, like, what do you think we're going to see at WrestleMania? Like, do you think Drew versus Brock, or do you think, like, Drew versus Finn? That doesn't...
Drew and Finn sounds like it'd be an amazing match.
Oh, I'm sure it would be. I could see the match.
It's not a headliner.
Yeah. I feel like they're just so conservative about, like... It feels like they're conservative about who they put in against Brock, and I feel like Seth makes more sense.
I could see them doing Seth and Lesnar without the championship.
That's true. They could do that. That's a fair... possibility.
How about this? What surprise entrance do you see coming?
What surprise? Well, I think we're going to see a Mr. Kevin Owens and a Mr. Sami Zayn.
Good picks.
Yeah, I mean, they announced that they're coming back soon, so...
good place to do it.
This is a good place to do it. Now, I think this is highly unlikely, but... Because it doesn't seem like they signed him. But if they did get Kenny Omega, this is where he would show up, I think.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, but
I think he's going to AEW, though.
Everybody seems to think he's just going to AEW with his friends. Like, the attitude of those guys, like...
Yeah.
Seems like they're going to stick together. They're going to try to do their own thing. Though they were offered huge amounts of money from WWE. Like, oh, my God, they try so hard to keep them from doing what they're doing.
Awesome Prime in the chat thinks Jay Lethal's a possibility.
Yeah? I don't think so.
No, you don't?
He's Ring of Honor champion right now.
I don't know.
I don't see that.
I think anything can happen in the Royal Rumble.
I wouldn't
be shocked if we saw Chris Jericho show up at the Rumble.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, you wouldn't be shocked. That would be so such Jericho.
That would be a Jericho move.
I do think you see Aleister Black show up.
Do we see Adam Cole again?
Maybe.
Bay.
Maybe. You're going to see a couple of NXT guys, that's for sure.
Yeah, especially since only 20 of the entrants have been announced officially.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you'll see EC3. I think that's a definite. I don't know what's going on with Lars Sullivan. It doesn't seem like anybody does. It seems like he has some kind of personal issue going on and was supposed to be present on TV by now, but hasn't been. Maybe they throw Heavy Machinery in there just to get them out there, you know, a little bit more.
Or at least Otis.
Oh, please. I know. Otis Dozovic is the best.
He's insane.
That dude is ridiculous.
Can you see any classic superstar showing up? Do you think we might see Matt Hardy do an appearance? Maybe Rob Van Dam?
Maybe. Oh, maybe a Bray Wyatt.
Oh, yeah.
Bray Wyatt time. I don't know how Luke Harper's doing on his injury. Yeah.
And the whole family come out together. That would be amazing.
Bray in there. Well, I don't think Braun is not listed on there. I don't know if he's still injured or not, but you'd have to think he's going to show up, come out there. Big Show.
You know, oh, yeah. Big Show still exists.
He still exists. Yeah, get Big Show out there. You know, get those big guys out there.
Mark Henry, maybe.
Yeah.
Somebody going to get the ass kicked.
Yeah. Yeah. Recent, you know, Hall of Famer. Yeah, that's a decent pick.
Do we get our annual surprise Godfather appearance?
Maybe. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it should be great regardless. Maybe it's, I wonder if you see someone, I wonder if you see like Buddy Murphy from 205 Live or maybe Drew Gulak showing up in there.
Probably we'll see someone from 205.
Yes, yeah, so see someone representing from 205 Live.
Get Mike Kanellis out there.
Seems like that guy might be done soon too. Fuck that guy. I was never into his shit. No.
Nah. The greatest,
I mean, their song was pretty great, but just nothing happened with those two.
They came like, in, he went on rehab and like, she got pregnant.
So it was just like dead on arrival, like, okay, whatever.
They got karma'd.
They got karma'd. Oh, maybe karma will show up. Nah, she's a actor now.
Yeah.
Maybe The Rock will show up now. And The Rock's
that would
show up.
That would be insane if just if you smell. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's like you know, God tier like appearances is like The Rock, Undertaker,
Roman,
Kenny Omega, or Roman. Yeah, that's just like holy crap. But yeah, I don't think any of those are likely.
You think Shawn Michaels might come out of retirement a second time?
Oh God, he never came out of retirement. I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
He held his own in that match. I'll say that.
I didn't watch it.
No?
No. All I saw was some GIFs on Twitter. I didn't watch anything from that show. I refuse to, and I don't feel like I missed anything.
It wasn't a good match, but Shawn Michaels, he's still got it. If he wants to go, he can still go.
Yeah.
He's Shawn fucking Michaels.
Yeah, just without the hair, I'm just like, he just looks old as shit now. Just, nah, dude, please. No. Shouldn't have done it. I'm sure that Saudi money was great, but yeah.
He's living comfortably now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. It's going to be an awesome show. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. 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 I am excited.
We're recording this on Wednesday, and I'm just like eagerly awaiting Sunday and Saturday to come. I can just watch these fucking things.
That's so much going on in the next like 4 days, but. Yeah, Sunday is going to be like, yeah, get myself that pizza, maybe get myself some of them wings, watch me some Royal Rumble.
Yeah, boy.
Invite no one over, just eat it all myself.
I wish I had friends to come. I wish we lived closer so that we could get together. The year that we all watched the Rumble at MAGFest was the greatest Rumble experience ever.
It was. It really was.
It was amazing.
That's how it used to be for me, like every Royal Rumble, you know, or every big pay-per-view, you know, get a bunch of people together and yell and make jokes. And
I don't have friends, so it's hard for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we used to all live close and used to all do those, but not so much anymore. Usually it's just me and like Lauren will watch like half the show and then she'll be like, oh, right, wrestling's terrible, and she'll disappear. and I don't blame her. I don't blame her because wrestling is awful, but we are trapped. We are trapped. We are. It is Stockholm syndrome.
I need Vince McMahon in my veins.
God, I need Vince's veins in my veins. It's gross.
Oh man. Well, that is it for our WrestleCast portion of the show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show. Or did you want to just get your review out of the way right now?
Oh yeah, right. My review. Shit, we should do that. Right.
We'll just split it up. We'll fucking whatever. This show's going to be a shit show.
Anyway, I know that music. It's Octahedron's music.
So yeah, first review of the night until much later on. Octahedron Transfixed Edition, developed by Demimon, published by Square Enix Collective, released January 17th on the Switch for $12.99. Square Enix provided a copy of this game to us for free for the purpose of this review, just like every game we cover on the show, but they want us to say it for their games, so thank you, Square Enix.
Surf
through a pulsating underworld on platforms. You pull from thin air where and when you want in this psychedelic action platformer. Surf, ascend, and escape. Tim, tell us about it.
Holy crap. You have to major brain gear shift right now.
Yeah, just a little.
Wrestling for an hour. Holy crap. Yeah.
Octavidia games now.
Man. Yeah, this is a vertical scrolling platformer where you make your own platforms. I guess that's kind of like your elevator pitch on the game. It reminds me a lot of Rainbow Islands. Did you play Rainbow Islands?
No.
What? It's the story of Bubble Bobble 2.
I never played
essential, it. It's such essential NES playing.
It's I am really, uncultured swine.
Dude, I will have you know, Rainbow Islands is actually apparently quite a popular game in Europe. Really? I don't know where the developer of Octahedron is from, but I would not be surprised at all if it was somewhere in Europe. Yeah, I was looking at a retro gamer magazine, like top 150 list, like a year or two ago. And Rainbow Islands was pretty near the top. And I was like, what the hell? Freaking people over there love Rainbow Islands, apparently. It is very well regarded. Not like over here where nobody knows, nobody remembers it. And nor has played it. And so, yeah, there's a Fat Gatsby Games of Future Past out there, I believe, where me and Dave, I made Dave play some Rainbow Islands, and we talked about it a bit. I did own Rainbow Islands as a kid. Anyways, it reminds me of Rainbow Islands. This is not a review for Rainbow Islands. This is a review for Octahedron. But just like the way kind of the mechanics work, and that it's weird. The game scrolls vertically. That's like an obvious similarity, but also kind of in Octahedron and Rainbow Islands, you're making your own platforms, and the way that you kind of attack enemies is a little bit indirect. I mean, when you start out in Octahedron, you're not attacking shit. You're surfing on your platform, and that's it. You're just learning how to get up a damn level, right?
Yeah.
But as you progress, your platform upgrades, and like eventually it's like, oh, it shoots a little thing downward, and then it's like, oh, it shoots a stream, it shoots a laser downwards in a continuous stream. Then it's like, oh, you also get these giant, like, crushing gears that come out of the sides of it. And that thing can do some damage when you spawn one of them. But kind of your main goal in every level is to reach the exit at the top. That's the thing you are trying to do. But along the way, you are breaking these lamps, and when you break a lamp, it spawns a flower on a platform above you, and then you have to collect the flower. And there's like these little colored triangles scattered around the level too, and they're a thing where you have to grab them, and then you have to be undamaged for like 5 seconds or something like that before it registers that you have it. It's not. I just played Celeste like a few months ago, and the strawberries in that game acted the same way, and that they would kind of cling to you for a second until you were safe, and then it was like, okay, you get the strawberry now.
Yeah.
So you can't just suicide into grabbing the stuff. And I just have a good appreciation for things that don't make any damn sense in games, just like the way things used to. Like, yeah, break lamps, get flowers. And I say sub-goal, but at the same time, you need to collect those flowers to unlock the pathway to the next world. And you need those to collect those triangles to unlock pathways to bonus levels. So those are kind of like the most important things to collect as you're going through a level. There's other little sub goals like trying to minimize your platform usage. Like there's a par number of platforms to use for a level, which I never came close to being less than. And there's like a little in-game achievement system too. But like one of the things I was impressed with, like each the game is broken up basically into like five different worlds, and each world has half dozen stages in it, give or take. They do a really tremendous job of keeping things fresh from stage to stage. Like there was no stage where I'm like, oh, this is like every stage was adding something new. Either it was like a new enemy or a new mechanic or like a new platform or a new type of switch, just like a new something was getting thrown into the mix. And when I first started playing, I was kind of like, oh, this is cool to just like, you know, pop in and play a couple levels and then maybe pop out, and it doesn't really sustain itself for long play sessions. But like the longer I kept going on, I kept finding myself playing like a world in a sitting, you know?
Yeah.
It was really addicting. I just kept coming back to it because it was like every stage there was something new and cool to check out and learn and figure out. I mentioned the platform upgrades. I am ahead of myself.
By the way, so, while there's a pause in the action, they are from Switzerland, and it's not a they, it's one guy.
Nice. Good job, one guy.
Yeah.
Way to be from Europe. I bet you love Rainbow Islands.
Solely responsible for nearly all aspects of the game, including design, programming, and art, and he's also a musician and sound engineer by trade. So Mono Mirror is an amazing person.
Nice. Awesome. I love these games that come out of like spilling out of one person's brain.
One person's twisted brain in the case of this game.
Yeah. So it plays, it's cool. Like you make these platforms, you surf on them, you get kind of a limit as to each stage has a different number of platforms you're allowed to make kind of consecutively before you touch the ground again. And whenever you touch a solid piece of ground, it refills your platforms. So some stages have like two. So it's like you can make one, two, and you have to figure out how to get to the next platform with two platforms, the next real platform with two of your little fake platforms. But there's other levels that give you like a dozen. So you have a bunch to work with, and you might have to do a lot of aerial maneuvering in those. But like you mentioned, yeah, surfing, when you create a platform, you can hold the button and kind of surf on it for maybe about a third of the screen before it disappears. Some stages have like a little power up where you pick it up and it restores one of your platform charges in midair. And you have to kind of work around that. It's cool. The game doesn't control. It doesn't feel like perfect, especially coming off the heels of Celeste, which is a damn good feeling platformer. Like there's just something like a little off about kind of your little man's jump. It's like he doesn't have like a lot of jump. You're meant to make use of these platforms. Like he doesn't have a great horizontal or vertical range. And sometimes it's just like, I wish you just had a little more oomph to your business, but it's fine. Like it still, I think, plays really well. It's fun and cool figuring out how to, kind of destroy enemies either by surfing above them or eventually when you get the aforementioned gear power up, just kind of slamming into them. but the thing about this game is it looks fucking awesome. It looks so goddamn good.
It does.
It is kind of I would use like vector graphics as a very ancient touchstone for it. But you think about like more recent games that have adopted kind of a vector graphic style. Like, well, I was going to say Geometry Wars. That game's a decade old. But stuff like that, where it's like, okay, we're using like very simple shapes, but there's a lot of like effect to it on the screen. You know, it's not just this simplicity, like things animate well, like the way things are drawn and come together is really interesting to look at. But just like when you were like, it really caught me. Cause I hadn't seen any video of the game before I started playing, so I didn't know exactly what I was getting into, but just like how vibrant and colorful and well animated and just like, just great this game is to look at. Like it feels and looks good when you're like, you're breaking these lamps and then like the flowers look really nice that you're picking up, like just such great visual cohesion to the game. It is an absolute pleasure to look at this damn thing. And on top of that, and this is something I already knew, the music is also very good, because it's a Chipzel soundtrack, or at least some of it is. And I bought that soundtrack last year, when I saw that it was out. So I've actually been listening to the soundtrack, kind of on and off for the last year, and it's great.
Nice.
It is fantastic. Kind of like a chip trance soundtrack thing. So the game is just like a really great total package. It's not like the most precise platform, but it is unique. It has some unique mechanics. It's not like other stuff.
Not like most girls.
It's not like most girls. but it can do its job, goddammit.
Well, and then overall...
yeah.
Overall, $13 on this one. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think this is definitely a buy, if just for the audiovisual experience. And even if you're not into platforms, go check out that soundtrack. It's up on Bandcamp. It's a really fun game. When I first started playing it, I was kind of like, I don't know, this feels a little iffy to me. But then just like the more I kept playing it and getting into it, the more I was just like, oh yeah, this game is actually quite a blast to play. There is a good number of levels. Like I put at least a good 5-6 hours into it for this review, and there's still like extra stages, extra challenges, more stuff to collect. I did not 100% a goddamn thing on my on my merry way. It seems like a great little game.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, that is it for this portion of the show. We're going to take a quick break.
The Ekibus portion of the show.
The Ekibus portion of the show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show, the news, more reviews. Buddy Steve-O is going to be around as well. He's got some stuff to talk about. It's a hell of a show. We've got a packed one.
It's going to be a long one.
It is. That's been a while since we've had a marathon episode. Oh, you.
Yeah. Oh, me.
Oh, I was going to ask if you had any final words, but after that, I don't know if I want to anymore.
No, that's all I got. Woo. Rollins Rumble 2019. Burr, 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 burr.
always good when you're unmuted.
Yeah, it does help things a little bit.
You would think so.
I try not to think. I'm doing that as little as possible this week. I'm doing literally everything as little as possible this week.
Always good to do.
Yeah, it's working out swell. The girls have gone to school one day.
That's it?
That's it. They went Wednesday. They were off last Friday, and then they were off Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And then it snowed, so they were out Tuesday. They went Wednesday. And then this morning, I got up at 5:30 this morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little late for me, but I was really surprised because I was expecting there to not be any school, and because it snowed. So I get up, and there's still school, and I'm like, well, son of a bitch. And so I get number one up, and number one, she gets dressed for school, has her breakfast, she makes her coffee, she's like all ready to go. She gets on the bus at 6:05 in the morning. Love her heart. If the school called at 5:54 a.m. and said it was a 2-hour delay.
Oh, God.
And then an hour after that, they call, and she's like, she's getting her boots back on, and she's like getting her stuff together for school. They call and cancel it an hour later.
Oh, boy. Steve-O, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay.
Yay.
You didn't say anything, so I wasn't sure.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt. I want to be respectful. It was a very interesting story. I've had that happen to me many, many years ago in the 1840s when I was also a child.
Back in our day.
Back in my day, they'd have sent your ass anyway. But up here, there's no, like, it's all dirt roads. And they're all one lane. And they're all on the sides of hills. And there ain't no guardrails. So...
so it turns into an impromptu Nagano Winter Olympics.
Yeah, they're just like, let's not send buses up that.
It's like Speed, but without the bomb and basically.
Yeah. And like as slow as possible. I'll tell you, last week, I think it was, number one, like, texted me. She's like, I got a tardy at school, but it's going to be excused. I was like, what happened? She said, the bus driver got stuck. And it was a perfectly clear day.
They get stuck on.
She was trying to turn around. So basically, a lot of the roads up through here, like they just kind of dead end somewhere. If you got like a four wheeler, you could keep going and cross over to one of the other haulers. But otherwise, it just ends. So most of them will have like a large area at the end to kind of turn around for like, you know, FedEx and UPS or the school bus. She was in one of those bus turnarounds, and she went off the road, what little bit of road there was, and got stuck. And they had to send out somebody with a dozer to get her out.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
So
that's,
I think
that's pretty standard fare.
I think we're all around the same age. Do you remember, like, there was a huge blizzard in the early 90s?
Yeah.
92.
Yeah, the blizzard of 92. Was I the only one that made a series of intricately connected tunnels in all the snow that went from like my house to my neighbor's house?
We did tunnels incredible. Like that just in my dad's. He used to live on a farm. We just made tunnels like that out back, but I didn't do. There were no neighbors to really go to, so I didn't do that.
We still made tunnels though.
Either.
Right. I think we actually had the parents ended up using it at some point so they could try and get out to the street. Felt very accomplished.
That was actually the year I've always been poor. And like, I grew up in a trailer, and that was the year it snowed so much that it actually collapsed the roof on my sister's room in our trailer.
Oh shit.
Wow.
Yeah. We had like, I want to say it was something like 46 or 47 inches of snow. It was just under 4 foot.
Damn.
And it collapsed the roof of our trailer.
I think we got in the 30s, 30 inches, something like that.
Yeah. The only more amount of snow I remember happening was the year that I started dating my wife. And that was when, in 2010, when we had the back-to-back snowstorms.
Oh, yeah.
In February. And I think one was like 32 inches and the next was like over 20 inches. Just a crazy amount of snow. And I had to dig my car out. there's so much snow on the ground that trains stopped running, and that never fucking happens.
Yeah. Trains go through anything. They don't give any fucks.
Yeah, but they canceled all the trains the day before I was supposed to go on the first date with my wife. And I was scared shitless. But thankfully, the next day they were running, Snowpiercer went straight up the Appalachians.
It was it's Appalachian.
Oh. All right, I'm leaving.
I knew that was coming.
I debated whether to say it. I can't help myself. If you say Appalachia, I'll throw an apple at you.
I don't know. Can you throw an apple that far? Can you throw an apple straight to Maryland?
I mean, I can't throw shit. I have rheumatoid disease. I'll get somebody else to try.
Sad laugh.
Sad laughter.
Where's my cane? I'll whistle ball it at you.
All right, what a wonderful thing for me to party on.
Batter up.
Oh, I got to keep all this stuff. Now I got to keep all the weather discussion. I got to keep everything.
Unless you want to do what I do and spend a few hours actually editing, right?
Oh, fuck that.
Bullshit.
Do you know how long it takes me to edit a single episode of Friday Night Fan Fiction now that I've started caring about the editing?
How long?
So the end result is normally between an hour and 20 and an hour and 45 minutes. It takes me up to 20 hours to edit that.
Oh, fuck all that noise.
Look,
I can only imagine how hard it would be to edit my ass because I'm awful.
You'd have to get individual stems for everybody and get all the timing just perfect. Do noise reduction. Don't become somebody who cares like me, Joe.
Oh, I care, just not that much.
he cares enough to yell at me to buy a better mic, but not enough to care.
You got a better mic.
I do have a good mic.
Yelling you about a mic was like a year and a half ago.
But you cared and you did it.
Yeah.
And it worked out. I did buy a mic.
Like I said, I care, just not that much.
But not enough to try to edit my ass.
Yeah,
That would be an absolute nightmare because I'm so random and I go on tangents and I forget shit.
I mean, you want to talk like about editing that. Ass? That will happen later when I do my review.
Oh, God. So how long do you have with us, Steve-O?
I can stay here until about 10:15, 10:30.
Cool. I don't think we'll have you that long because there's not a lot of news this week. Okay. So I figured all this bullshitting will make it into the show just to kind of pad things out. Not that it's not a long enough episode considering Tim and I went an hour and 10 minutes talking about wrestling in the filler, first half filler, of the show.
Wrestlecast.
Filler. filler.
Filler's always good.
Yes. All right. Well, I want to hear the news. You guys need to news me up.
Well, first off, we are joined by our friend Steve-O Bortz. How are you doing, Steve-O?
That's not news.
We should introduce you.
Hi, I'm Steve-O. I have blue hair now, and that's pretty cool.
Really? Blue hair?
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
As Strong Bad said, you got to have blue hair if you're going to be an anime guy. Here, I'll even plug in my webcam. Hold on.
All the MP3 listeners are going to be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Well, I mean, just imagine an early 30s beardy white guy with blue hair. That's it.
You know, though, in all reality, the colored hair is like on trend for us 30 something millennials. It's A-okay.
I did it way back in the day. I was the front man for a punk band for like 5 years from the end of high school up through college. There you go. You can see it's silvery blue. I don't have good lighting in here. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, it just looks like my grays.
There. Now you can see.
I could see some blue there.
Yeah, yes. Blue. Tried to do it purple, faded back to blue very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done my daughter's hair in purple before, and that shit's a nightmare because it just does not last for shit. And I've got like all the tricks for how to make hair color last longer. There's nothing you can do about purple. No,
you have to not shampoo it ever. That's the only trick to
you
keep
can,
the color.
You can actually put, if it's just the one color, you can put the dye in your conditioner And then when you condition your hair, it kind of refreshes the color a little bit.
And stains your tub terribly.
I mean, that's life. My daughter has pink hair. That's life. Everything.
Does she also have pink pillows now?
No, because when we dye her hair, she will, if she goes to bed with her hair wet, she will wrap her pillows in a towel.
That's smart.
That. Yeah. We have all the tricks. I'm telling you, she's had pink hair for 3 or 4 years now. She's had pink, and then she had a purple to pink ombre. And I think this weekend we're doing it. She got berry blast for Christmas or something like that. So we're doing it like a purpley pink kind of color.
Hmm. Well, first of all, I want to say major props to you as a mom. It, not just like being okay with it, but like encouraging that. Because as somebody who grew up with parents that basically said, you know, we expect you to be, you know, a nice Jewish boy, and you're going to go to Harvard, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. Like, literally, like, anything that deviated from the norm appearance-wise, they very much disapproved of. So good on you for doing things right.
Yeah, see, I wasn't even allowed to get my first haircut until I was 16.
What?
What?
Yeah. I just.
How long was your goddamn hair?
Way past my ass. You know, the funny thing is, like, I have that whole, I have the whole attitude of it's hair, do what you want when it comes to the girls. And yet at the same time, all of them have hair past their ass. They just,
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Like they just choose not to cut it. Every now and then, number one will get hers trimmed up with some layers in it. But I've offered to do it for number two, and she has no interest at all. Number three, like, literally starts to cry if you mention cutting her hair. She just doesn't want it. They like it longer, but they're cool with the different funky colors and stuff. Although I did tell number two, just as a joke, that I would murder her if she did anything to change the color of her hair, because she's got, like, this fantastic fire engine red hair.
Oh, wow.
And it's just natural, and it's so pretty. All of the girls have, like, a strawberry blonde undertone, because David and I are gingers. But number two, like, she has no blonde to hers. It's just red.
What you need to do is just say, if you're not going to use your hair, can I have it?
Can I have it? See,
mail it to me.
Yeah, who sent some to Joe? Actually, it was funny because I dyed my hair. I have grays at this point. I got my first gray when I was 14.
And
so I've been dyeing my hair since I was 16 when my sister let me get it cut. She let me get it dyed too, and it just started and never stopped. But I've always just dyed it back my natural color. But I got brave a couple months ago, and I used henna hair dye, and I dyed it like this darker red. And everybody was like, oh, now we see where number two gets her beautiful hair from. And I'm like,
bitch, this is hair dye.
It's not even hair dye. It's leaves. Like, you literally steep it to make a tea. And it's like, don't use metal utensils or it will cause your hair to turn green. And I'm like, shit.
Hell yeah.
Like, I made my husband go out and cut me a branch off of a tree and whittle the bark off of it, and that's how I stirred the hair dye.
I have no words. Wow.
It was an effective method. Like, henna does not fuck around. You can mess that shit up and it will mess you up. But it looks really damn good when it's done.
Damn.
I don't think I'm adventurous enough to do that.
I'm going to do it again next week. As soon as it gets here, I got to place the order on Amazon because my hair glitter is back. And I already walk with a cane. I don't need to have gray hair too.
I'm lucky. I'm almost 40 and oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
Say it again for the crowd in the back.
Oh my God. That just sunk in. Alive on the show. Uh-huh. I don't have much hair left, but what I do have, thankfully, I don't have a lot of gray. So, like, I have some pepper in my beard, but for the most part, it's, you know, still pretty black. So,
see, Dia's only just started to get the occasional gray in his beard, and he just pulls it out. But he his hair is flawless, and I hate it. It's like I've been dyeing mine for 22 years.
Oh, did that sink in for you too now?
My birthday is coming up.
I didn't start getting gray hair until the Trump presidency, so I'm kind of happy about that.
Mine has gotten far worse.
I was going to say mine escalated quickly, though.
Yeah, it's just from like, I used to just have, I had one of those, which one is the X-Men? Rogue that has the one gray streak. I had one of those just going on by my right ear, and now all of a sudden it's like, no, it's everywhere. Fuck you. Yep. And when you're a ginger, that shit doesn't turn like the peppery black and gray. You get stark white. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's just, and you can't hide it. It's dye it or pull it. And at this point, I can't afford
to shave it all.
The show's already got one bald person
on
it.
It's like, bop it. Dye it.
Bald jokes just keep coming.
This is what happens when you invite me on the show, Joe.
Oh, no. Like, this is what happens every week. Just not hair talk.
Just me.
That, too. I guess I would make it worse, though. You know, it's going to be 1 a.m. and you haven't have started the news yet.
That's okay. There's no school tomorrow. I'm good.
I got to be at work at 7.
Oh, man.
To you. I say that, but that means I got to spend all day with my kids tomorrow. So,
you're government work, aren't you?
Me? Yes. Yeah. But I am not one of the furloughed employees.
I was going to ask if you're affected by the shutdown at all.
Only roughly a third of the government is affected by the shutdown. Our agency had its full budget passed last year, so we're good till September. However, that doesn't mean that I'm not stressing the fuck out about this. I can't even speak. I'm so stressed. because every day that goes by, it's like when our agency requires a new budget, this is what could happen to us.
Yeah.
If they just kick the can down the road, I could go for 2 to 3 paychecks or more, since it's still going on, without getting paid. And that freaks the fuck out of me. Not to mention all of the other people that I know who are feds who are either furloughed or deemed essential and have to work for no pay right now. So that is a 5-hour diatribe that we do not want to get into.
Oh, yeah. I like keeping this a politic free zone as much as I can.
Oh, no, I know. It's just, I appreciate you asking, let's not go there.
Yeah. Should we talk news then? Don't all answer at once.
Should we?
I mean, isn't that what we're supposed to do?
I'm just going to sit here trying to find more nudie mods for games, so.
Of course you are, Steve-O. Anyway, let's see, what kind of news do we have this week? 4 games were added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup. And they're all Command & Conquer games.
Interesting. Oh.
Yeah, Command & Conquer 3 Tiberium Wars, Command & Conquer 3 Kane's Wrath, Command & Conquer Red Alert 3, and Command & Conquer Red Alert 3 Commander's Challenge.
So, Red Alert 3, the best Red Alert. I don't care what people say about Red Alert 2. Red Alert 3 is the best because it has Tim Curry saying the word space. Space!
Yes, it is now playable on Xbox One.
That is awesome. That is really cool.
I love the backward compatibility program. There's so many cool games that I wouldn't have picked up otherwise if they didn't hit backward compatibility and tried them that way. It's just, it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Next!
I was trying to get a conversation going about the backward compatibility program.
I would like to have some kind of, well, I don't know, we talk about it a lot too, though. So I feel like I'm repeating myself if I carry on. But I think it's fantastic because I have shit tons of games just sitting on a bookcase that I've never fucking touched because I don't have enough time. And then I can be, even if I don't want to play something, I can just throw it at number one and be like, surprise, you got a new game today. Because I mean, she didn't play the 360 that much.
That was honestly one of the nicer things about going back to the older systems, and you know, when they were cartridge based or even, you know, sometimes disc based, is that you'd be able to have that kind of cross generational compatibility outside of what Nintendo's doing, which is nickel and diming people in order to buy the same games over and over and over again on the virtual console.
Yeah, well, they don't have a virtual console now, unfortunately. I wish they would. They just have their Nintendo Online service that has, I don't know, like 20, 30 NES games that you could play.
Mm-hmm. You gotta pay for that separately. Like, that's one of those, even if you own it, you still have to pay the subscription.
Yeah, it's thankfully it's only 20 a year, so yeah. That's not bad at all.
Is that tied into the Nintendo Switch thing for online?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That makes it a little better.
The NES games are a bonus of paying for online.
No, my response is summed up very eloquently by an article on thehardtimes.net. Why spend $99 on a PlayStation Classic when you can hack a PSP and never shut the fuck up about it?
Yep.
100%. I am actually literally hacking my PlayStation Vita as we speak. So.
Oh, nice. I should do that. My Vita just sits plugged in on my desk anymore, feeling unloved.
Well, as long as you haven't upgraded past 3.68, you should be able to hack it.
I'm probably upgraded past that.
Well, let's see. They only released the firmware like a week or two ago. Do you like open it up just to install the firmware?
Not really. I'll turn it on. Like if we get a game to review that I have on Vita, I'll fire it up then and like put the code in, download it. But
we'll take that conversation offline. If we can hack it, we can totally hook you up with like fucking RetroArch so you can play a whole bunch of emulated games on it.
I mean, I could play emulated games on my Wii U.
Yeah, but you can't take that with you to a bathroom at a restaurant.
I mean, you can, but it'd be awkward.
Yeah, let's go to CC's, Joe. We'll set up the Wii U at our table, and then you can take the tablet into the john when you need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, man. Works for me. I bring the tablet with me. I'll bring a Wii remote because you have to use that. We'll be good.
Gosh.
We really do have to get our CC's date scheduled, though.
We will. This week has been really, really bad in terms of work, but we will.
Gotta figure, since you couldn't make it to MAGFest, you scrub.
Yeah, but then again, a lot of people did, and that's another 5-hour conversation.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of MAGFest and speaking of Command & Conquer, did you check out the Tiberian Sons concert?
I did not.
Oh, you gotta do that.
That was on the other night, right? That was a couple days ago?
The complete multicam version that Tony reworked is on the Tiberian Sons YouTube channel. That just popped up like 2 days ago, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. It's on my flagged I gotta watch list because I do want to see that. And I've been really happy with how much Tony's been doing these days. He seems really set in terms of his musical projects. He's on top of the world, him and Danimal.
Yeah. I mean, he's part of fucking Trans-Siberian Orchestra, so exactly. Of course things are going well for him.
Right. But it's crazy. No, I haven't checked it out, but I will. And yes, backwards compatibility is a good thing. Next.
Overkill's The Walking Dead console release has been postponed indefinitely.
Oh.
No. Yeah. I'm sad about this.
Apparently, it's not that well received on PC. Steve-O, you're a PC gamer. Have you heard much about it?
Nope.
All right. Helpful.
Oh, yeah. I've been following it pretty hard. I knew that it was pretty light on the PC release side and that not a lot of people had picked it up, but I was still hoping that it would find its footing. I wanted to play it.
I wonder if this has to do with Overkill, didn't they file for bankruptcy reconstruction or something a couple months ago that we talked about, and I wondered if it would affect it, or was that something else?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
But that doesn't mean that I'd remember, because I don't know what I think.
No, Starbreeze was who...
Starbreeze.
Yeah.
Were they involved in...
I don't know. There's too many games to remember this shit. I don't know. I'm getting old. Oh, like we covered, I'm almost 40, and I want to hang myself for saying that.
No. Don't do that, Joe.
That sounds really convincing, Steve-O. No, please don't. No, you made me sad. I'll be sad. No, wait. Steve-O
is sad. Now his heels match his hair.
Yeah, don't make me blue, dabba-dee-dab.
Dabba-die.
No!
Last bit of news that I have is apparently Americans have spent over $43 billion on games in 2018, and that is physical sales only, nothing digital.
What?
Over and 43 said that billion.
Physical media is dead.
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, physical media is getting there. Physical media, but
yeah, it's on its way out. I will say that.
I'm a digital person, but only because I live in a small house and I don't have anywhere to keep that shit.
Mm-hmm. So then all our review copies are all digital.
And my free games are all digital.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice. My kids got two physical games for Christmas, and I looked at the disc. I was like, shit.
Well, I mean, at this point, the only real reason to get physical is if it comes with extra swag to go on top of it. Like, that's a lot of the physical releases these days.
I wouldn't be mad at a physical copy of The Division 2 if it came with all the cool shit.
Well, then just order the collector's edition.
Don't tempt me, because see, my birthday and Valentine's Day and my anniversary are all very fucking close to each other.
To do all the, get it all combined.
And I'm just really, like, if D hears me, he's going to be like, well, three birds, one stone.
Yeah. Oh, that makes it easy.
We can't make it that easy on him, because I still want some paint, too.
Just order all of the collector's editions for The Division 2, because they have a bunch of different ones.
I want them all.
Get them all. And then trade in the other copies of the games and get, like, $6 at GameStop.
20 cents. Yeah, 20 cents.
No, some belly button lint. Brand new, you'd probably get, like, 20, 25 bucks, which is still fucking awful, but...
I just pass them around to my friends.
There you go.
I've done that. Like,
mail it to Studa and be like, here, you're playing with me.
But he's already buying it. I think he pre-ordered. Yeah, we're just... Studa and I have a long, tumultuous history with pre-ordering and buying season passes in advance, specifically with Call of Duty. We've done it with a few and been very dissatisfied with our purchases in the end. And we don't do that anymore. And so we both are pretty strict about not pre-ordering, but The Division 2...
is one of those exceptions.
It's just the one thing that both of us are like, nope, that money's gone. Here we go. We are in day one.
Yeah, I'm hoping to pick that up too.
That is a hell or high water.
What's on your radar, Steve-O?
For just upcoming games?
Yeah.
Nothing really, actually. I've been kind of trying to resolve myself to play my backlog and actually clear out and complete a lot of these games. Like, to show you how far behind I am, I bought the Year of Luigi 3DS Special Edition so I could get a copy of Mario and Luigi Dream Team. I'm only just now getting near the end. And that came out in 2013. So there's a lot. And on top of that, as I mentioned, you know, I'm hacking my Vita wide open. I don't feel I fully own a console until I have hacked the fuck out of it. So there's a lot of Vita games that I have purchased. I think I have one of, like, maybe not like the top 10%, but definitely in the top 20% of collections of Vita games, you know, all five of us in the United States.
Oh, God.
And there's a lot of really interesting looking JRPGs that I need to get under my belt. And all of those are easily going to be like, you know, 80 to 100 hours a piece.
Yeah.
But if I had to say I'm looking forward to a single game this year, I don't think I could put my finger on anything at all.
Really?
Yeah. I'm still playing Forza Horizon 4, which is a blast. Maybe the new Pokemon game, since they said that's supposed to be out, the new mainline Pokemon game on the Switch.
Are they saying that's this year?
Yeah, they did say it was supposed to be out by the end of 2019.
Hmm.
If I do remember correctly. I might be wrong, but I think that that's what it's supposed to be. And that is a series that I will constantly stay up to date on, because it's the best combination of casual and intense of all kinds of different role-playing games.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 2019, the year that the Vita died, you know, they're discontinuing that, so me, the hipster that I am, I have to start indulging myself wholeheartedly in that. Till it becomes not cool to be cool. So
I liked the Vita before the Vita was discontinued.
I like most about the Vita, and I like it even more now that since I've hacked it, they sell something called an SD2 Vita Pro, where I can replace the game card with a micro SD card.
Wow.
Yeah. Because that is my biggest gripe with the Vita, is that...
the goddamn memory card.
Fucking $110 for 64 gigs! Actually, I think it's more now. I think the price has gone up since they've discontinued it. Let me take a quick glance at Amazon to see. Vita, 64 gigabytes. Nope, still $95.
Don't they have a 120? I think mine's a 128 that I imported from Japan.
No, the most expensive one is a 64 from Japan. They never had
a 128. Is it the 64? I thought it was one. I can't remember this shit. There's too much.
It is the 64. That's the highest. There's nothing for a 128, but that's doesn't matter anymore because I have a 128 gigabyte micro SD card and loading all the fucking games on that. But, I mean, if Sony had actually cared and not had its head at least 10 feet up its own ass, they could have removed removed their proprietary storage, added micro SD for the Vita 2000, and instead of launching the PlayStation TV as an isolated thing, made a Vita 3000 that was like the Switch and actually given Nintendo some healthy competition. But no! No! Sony has to get my blood pressure up so I get upset about this!
And now his hair is turning purple.
No, his face is turning purple.
Well, I was thinking of all the blood rising up and like getting into the hair follicles and turning up purple with the blue.
I mean, I thought the nadir of Sony's gaming experience was that E3 conference where they announced the PlayStation 3 price and had just all of the awful things, the friggin' giant robot crab with historically accurate Japanese battles.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought that was the worst, but no, how they've treated the PlayStation Vita is by far the worst thing they have done in their entire time being a games company. So, I'll still enjoy it. I'll still cuddle with it. I'll play all my Eroge games on it. Speaking of Eroge games...
Yeah, that's all the news I had. Should we dive into the reviews?
Go! Next!
Steve-O, you ready?
I mean, I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, well, the first game that we're going to talk about is called Senran Kagura. Did I say it right?
Yes, yeah, Senran Kagura. You got it.
Burst Renewal, developed by Tamsoft, published by XSEED and Marvelous Games, released January 22nd on PS4 and Steam for $39.99. Experience the original Senran Kagura Burst, the beginning of the world's best-loved buxom battle series like never before. Tackle the classic ninja brawler from a whole new perspective in glorious fluid HD with new features and mechanics throughout. Steve-O, tell us about it.
Also, major props to Ryan Graff, one of the head localizers at XSEED. Super cool guy. And somebody who I follow on Twitter. We actually had a moment at some point where he said his start of writing was writing Star Wars fan fiction, which was very near and dear to my heart.
You so, love your fan fiction.
I do. I do. I have bought and played every game in the Senran Kagura series that has been released in the United States. Senran Kagura Burst originally was a 3DS digital exclusive in the US. It did get a boxed release over in Europe. And it was a 2.5D brawler, more similar to Streets of Rage than Dynasty Warriors, which is what a lot of the games afterwards ended up being like. The 3DS had two games, Senran Kagura Burst and Senran Kagura 2 Deep Crimson. Outside of that, on the PlayStation Vita and PS4, along with PC, is Senran Kagura Shinobi Versus, Senran Kagura Estival Versus, and Senran Kagura Peach Beach Splash. There is a side game that has literally nothing to do with the main series called Bon Appetit, which is a rhythm game where you cook and strip the other person's clothes off. So,
yay!
Yeah.
That escalated quickly.
Yes, it did. And I will fully admit it is a guilty pleasure. The whole series is a guilty pleasure. When they decided to go back and redo Burst as the new style, more like the Versus games, I was very interested in seeing how they would do it. Mostly because they already modernized the original game by turning it into an anime. So I don't know why they wanted to do this beyond just maybe they're running out of new ideas. I don't know. But I'm not going to complain. I did want to see side by side what the differences were between the two. And I have to say, I forgot how much I was really not into Burst on the 3DS. The game runs abysmally slow. The combat is extremely like rough and unresponsive. The soundtrack is great. The visuals had a lot to be desired, and the story was okay. Burst Renewal brings that original concept and everything else about it that was bad, all the way up to the level I expect to see with something like Estival Versus. It was, it felt very natural going from the latest brawler in the series, which was Estival, right into Burst Renewal, where they even introduced some new mechanics, which is, it's kind of weird, starting the series over and then adding new things to it. But I'm not going to complain. I spent about 12 hours playing through it. I beat one of the two campaigns available at launch. I believe they're planning on doing DLC for the other two schools that are involved in the universe. But I played a little bit of the other one, and it was the most refined the series has felt so far, with a few caveats. There are some bugs there. Well, there are some bugs in there that make the game very frustrating. I don't know if these bugs are deliberate, whether or not they're features. the whole premise of the game is you are one of five ninjas at opposing schools of shinobi. One of them are good shinobi, the other are bad shinobi. All of them are very young, but still over the age of being able to portray naked, extremely well-endowed young Japanese women. And their clothing, it's basically like they're fighting in paper towels with how easily their clothing can be removed from their body. But if you like Dynasty Warriors or Bayonetta, you will enjoy the combat style of this. The only problems I have are the lock-on mechanics and a couple of other game-breaking bugs in terms of parrying and reflecting, which I, again, I don't know if they're designed that way. I have yet to really weigh in on their community pages, but it's really frustrating when you get attacked and your lock-on drops and you have to lock on again, and it's not like you're debuffed and can't lock on anything. It's just the game decides to disable your lock-on for a second and you have to re-engage it.
Mm.
Voiceover was great. Visuals are fantastic. The updated engine from Estival and Peach Beach Splash looks really, really good. The story is, again, almost identical to the anime and the original game, where you also had the choice of the two opposing schools. I really have nothing else to add to that besides the fact that all of the mechanics are there on the PC. The PS4 version is censored.
Do you know more about the censorship? Because I know this Sony censorship has been a hot topic among PS4 users who are getting tired of Sony of America basically censoring the games that they don't want censored, including Senran Kagura. Like, what is being censored?
Certainly. As introduced in Estival Versus, that the game series has always had a very heavy mechanic on the dressing room. And I don't mean like Peep Show dressing room, although there are definitely things in there that can equate to that. But as you play through the game, you get money and you can go to the shop and you can buy different pieces of clothing and dress the characters up however you want. They have a pre-transformation dress up and a post-transformation dress up. You also can select their underwear and accessories. So being able to customize that, they ended up adding something called intimacy mode. And there was a side game released on the Switch that basically takes intimacy mode and takes it to the umpteenth extreme. You can have your character just standing sort of in an empty void in the dressing room, and you press a button to engage intimacy mode, and suddenly there are two hands on the screen. And you can grab, and you can slap, and you can rub. And you do this in order to gain affection from them. And you can eventually kiss them and stuff like that. So, again, I think, from my understanding, the reason they objected to it is because you could literally slap their boobs. Which is,
in a game about fighting and stripping characters.
Exactly. And it's not like it's hurting them. And, of course, the discussion of consent isn't even there. But still, it's in the game's premise. So if you've already gotten that far, you are assumed to basically be okay with it. And it really irks me because it's not even that offensive. Yes, boob slappers. That's right, Awesome Prime. But it's just like, it's been in previous games. Why go back on it now? Why censor it? Why draw attention and outrage? It makes no sense to me. And they had to delay the PC release as well, even though it has those features all intact.
And they're only pissing off the fans of the series.
Right. And I believe that in the future, Senran Kagura as a series will probably forego being released on Sony platforms because of this. The producer and creator of the series is a very outspoken boob and butt man. I think he said, tits are life and ass is hometown, is his phrase.
A good saying.
It is. It just... I don't want to feel like I'm just bashing on Sony here, because then I'm going to take your job, Joe.
Yeah. Well, no, it's Cole's job now. I'm kind of at peace with Sony for the most part.
So that's all I know about the censorship. But if you've never played a Senran Kagura game, Burst Renewal would be a great place to start. So in that situation, I'd say buy it. If you have played previous Senran Kagura games, maybe just watch the anime instead, at least until they come out with a little bit more content for it. If you just can't get enough of playing the game, like the gameplay itself, then I'd say buy it in that case as well. But if you're just so heavily immersed in it, I probably wouldn't have bought it knowing how much I'd already played. It was still a fun experience. But if you're new to the series, a definite buy, as long as you have no shame. If you're experienced in it, then, you know, watch a video of the gameplay, see if it's something you're going to be interested in, because the new mechanics they introduced are very, very fun. The burst mode itself is really, really fun and adds another layer of complexity to it. That's about all I got for it. They did a very good job, as always, except for the one time I clipped through a wall and fell through the earth.
Always good.
Always good. But yeah, I had a great time with it, as I always do with Senran Kagura. And if nothing else, it reminded me that I do want to go back and beat the entirety of Estival Versus on hard mode.
Well, there you go. It's inspiring you.
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. So you going to stick around, or did you want to hop off? Because we got more reviews to do.
I think I am going to drop off. I will leave it to you guys. I am going to try and get some shut-eye.
Sounds good. Steve-O, thank you so much for joining and keeping us company for the past hour. You're an awesome guy.
No, thank you. And as always, pleasure to see both of you. I hope you all have a fantastic night and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too, baby.
Take it easy, Steve-O.
Bye.
Bye. I love Steve-O.
Steve-O's a gin dandy.
Gin dandy. We used to have a restaurant around here called Jim Dandy's.
What did they serve?
I think like hot dogs and shit.
I don't like hot dogs.
How can you not like hot dogs?
Funny coming from somebody who draws wieners for a living.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't like hot dogs.
Well, should we move on to the next review?
Let's go.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Alvastia Chronicles, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released January 18th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99, and is a Play Anywhere title. After encountering the man who killed their parents 10 years prior, Elmi and Alan set out to avenge their deaths as they fight to stem the tide of monsters flooding into the upper world and restore peace to Alvastia. In their quest to amass an army of companions with the same goal, will they really be able to gain the strength necessary to bring their parents' killer to justice and save the world? Cole, can they?
It depends. Do you really suck at RPGs? And what difficulty did you choose? Because I played on Super Pussy Crybaby mode, also known as Easy, just to make life a little easier for me, because I play a lot of RPGs, and at the same time, I don't play a lot of JRPGs of this caliber. And so I tend to need things explained to me in dummy terms. especially when it comes to ones like Alvastia Chronicles, because this game has over 100 companions.
Yeah,
not 100
it does.
Companion combinations, 100 companions.
Yep.
You get lost in the sea of potential setups very quickly.
I'll be honest. What I did in the game was, as I got companions, I filled them into the slots and then the strategy room, and then I just ignored the rest.
Yep, I did the same. I was like, oh, it gave me this one. Okay, that's good enough.
To me, they were collectible.
There were so many, and you were stumbling into them and finding them at such a rapid rate that you didn't even get a chance to try one out before you had four more.
Yeah.
I was actually reading some other comments about this because, like I said, I've played these kind of RPGs before, but not one of this caliber. And I wasn't entirely comfortable with how I felt about it. And I wanted to get some other people's opinions. And I did see where other people were saying most other RPGs like this tend to limit you more in the 30 and 40 companion range. And so 100 of them is really just fucking insane.
Yeah, well, a lot of Kemco games, you'll get your four characters and then that's it.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's so many characters that you could recruit in this game, I thought was a neat touch to it. But again, it just got to a point where it was overwhelming how many you would get, and you would just end up not using the majority of it. Like I said, I just treat them as a collectible. I'm trying to collect all of the different characters in the game.
I do think that it's interesting the way that it lets you set the characters up and forge the bonds with them and everything. But again, I was looking more at their class type when it came to setting them up than the individual companion. And it made it a little easier rather than just getting overwhelmed with like, well, this one's got this tiny little stat here. It was like, no, I want a mage or, you know, whatever I was going for in whatever slot. It was a lot easier to just like break it down and look at it as an overall group instead of individual companions.
Yeah.
Cause you can get lost in that sea very easily.
Very much so.
One thing that did get me about the game is that it was originally a mobile game. It was ported
all of to these consoles. All of these Kemco games originally start off as mobile games. So.
Yep. There are some of those mobile aspects still stuck inside of it that are original and don't really feel natural on a console game. When we play console games, we don't expect to have to wait 30 minutes for a chest to unlock or an hour and a half for a chest to unlock. And that just kind of bugged me because I would sit, like have to discard chests because I'd forget to check to see if they were ready to unlock. and I'm just like, did you ever find any of the keys to unlock chests?
You could buy them in the little extra store that they have in the game.
Mm. I didn't know if you were just supposed to find them.
I found like one or two naturally through the game, but you can buy them. I never had an issue of having too many chests.
I did.
I would always seem to either get the brown chest, which you can open immediately, or I wouldn't get that many that I needed to spend keys to open them. I used some of my, I forget, AP or whatever they are, the extra currency in the game. I used it to buy like a 5-pack of keys and I still have 6.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't buy any, but I was also just like trying to find them.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of trouble. I don't have any. I'm just well, that sucks.
Speaking of that extra store with the accessories that you can buy, one of the best things in this game that you can do is it starts you off with a bunch of the currency, which I believe is what they do. If you buy the full version of the mobile, they'll give you some of this in-game currency to make up for it. You cannot buy the currency on the Xbox version of the game. They do have a handful of different microtransactions that you can pick up that gives you no encounters or extra experience. But what I did was I used the initial load of currency and I bought an experience ring and a friend point ring that doubled my XP and doubled my FP after every battle. I did that pretty much first thing in the game. And I've been cruising through it on hard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just, it seems.
But again, that's where I wouldn't think to go digging for things like that. I tend to take these kind of games and just like throw me in and let me slash things.
Yeah.
And I don't think of it. I'm not good at the min-max element of it.
Yeah. I found that after getting those and leveling up as quick as I did, the game just felt like a breeze. It felt almost too easy, but I enjoy easy RPGs. So I would just go into a battle, auto battle it, go through it in like 10 seconds and move on.
Yeah, I played on easy, like I said, but I never had any kind of trouble with the battles. as soon as I was able to have a full set of characters, then I was just like, okay, well, I press the button and it goes and I carry on and that's it. And I don't, most of the time it would come up and say overkill for whatever I was trying to fight because I had just absolutely obliterated it. Worst case scenario, I would have to hit it twice. And it was just, it was surprisingly easy, but I wasn't disappointed or frustrated with the easiness because I knew you could get so lost in the whole min-max side of it and that there was so many different elements to set it up to play the way you wanted. And I was just lucking out and hitting the easy route. Then I wasn't really in a mindset of this is too easy. Because for me, when it comes to RPGs, it's the base, the stats that are the most important part, not you know, the difficulty of a battle, but absolutely smashing a battle is what most people are going to want.
Yeah, overall, though, I really enjoyed the game. I thought there was plenty of content there. I'm not even reviewing this one, and I put over 10 hours into it easily. Just nice. I think this is one of the better Kemco games that have come to Xbox. It just really sucked me in. The story was really enjoyable. Some of the writing would get kind of irritating, like the allusions to incest.
Oh my gosh, that was...
Which is just... It's awkward in the game because they don't come out and say it. It's just...
Why don't you two get a room? We're brother and sister. Like, no. Yeah,
it's just, it was weird to have that in there.
And it just throws it out the gate immediately.
Yeah.
And it never lets up.
Well, it goes away eventually. It goes away eventually, but it's still an awkward thing in the game to see.
The people you encounter are just always immediately like, oh, you know, lovey-dovey. And then you're like, no, we're siblings. And you're just like, okay, this is gross. Yeah. But
it was just weird to see in the game. And then the only other weird thing I thought was early in the game, after you get to a certain area, the game specifically asks if you would like to review it, which is another one of those mobile holdovers. Uh-huh. Which, it didn't bother me. I just said yes and then closed out of it. I'll leave a review later on. Plus, I'm doing a review on this show. But I really enjoyed the game for $15. I personally would give it a buy it. Then again, I'm of the camp of support RPGs on Xbox One. So, what do you think for $15?
No, I say buy it as well. I thought it was really enjoyable. Like I said, I play RPGs, but... I'm not hardcore RPG. And at the same time, I thought this was definitely a good way to introduce JRPGs to somebody who doesn't play them a lot, because you really can just set it to easy and just take whatever it throws at you and still just run through it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was definitely accessible. I thought it played well. I didn't have any kind of problems with glitchiness or anything. A lot of times with this kind of pixel art style, I can get a little lost in it and have trouble kind of telling the characters apart and stuff. This one, I thought they did a really good job and they were easily identifiable as to who they were, even though they were just little tiny square people.
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job with that. And I think even if you're not sure that a JRPG is for you, if you can get past the whole incest writing, then you're good. You're probably going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. Good stuff.
Yay! Next!
All right, next game to talk about is called Smoke and Sacrifice, developed by Solar Sail Games, published by Curve Digital, released January 15th on Xbox One and PS4 for $24.99. Smoke and Sacrifice sees Sachi, a mother forced to give up her son, adventure into a grotesque underworld on a quest that will lead to a darker truth. Cole, tell us about it.
Okay, so Smoke and Sacrifice is a 2D survival adventure. As you said in the description, you play as Sachi. She lives in one of the few remaining villages surrounding what's known as a sun tree. This is a large mechanical looking tree with lights and orbs sticking out of it all over the place. And the villagers worship the sun tree because they believe that it keeps them safe from the monsters in the world. However, they believe that it requires a sacrifice to keep it going. And the sacrifice must be a woman's firstborn. So this turns dark very quick.
Just a little.
As you discover that Sachi's story begins with her being forced to give up her son Leo for the sacrifice. She's been told not to get attached to him. She's tried to do everything she could to follow it along. You can tell she's very bothered by the whole sacrifice. It's not something she wants to carry through with, but she knows that she must. And so a lot of the other characters that she interacts with, they go way out of their bounds to try to say, oh, you know, you should be happy. You've done a great thing. It's a wonderful thing to give up your child and you can have more children. And it's very cruel and very dark and very heartbreaking to, you know, experiences where she has to leave her child on this pedestal and just watch him be sacrificed. Following her son's sacrifice, however, the village is attacked by monsters anyway. Oh, and yay. She starts to question that maybe not everything is what she's being told. And that maybe there's a possibility for her son to still be alive. And maybe she can save him. Mm-hmm. And maybe she can figure out what's really happened. So as you play, your whole goal is to find your way into the underworld below the village, which is marred by this deathly smoke and these dangerous monsters lurking in it. And at the same time, you have to uncover what's happened, the truth behind the sun tree, and the truth behind the sacrifices. And with any luck, you might find your son and save everything. It is a survival game. It does have survival mechanics. One of the better aspects of Smoke and Sacrifice is that despite its survival gameplay, it's not a hardcore survival. You're not to the point where you have to eat or you're going to die or you're going to have to maintain body temperature or anything. But you do have to be careful. You have to find crafting materials in the world. You need to be able to make a lantern to keep the smoke at bay. You need to, but there's a day and night cycle, so you can have times when you're not under the threat of the smoke, and you can go out and try to find more items. Whereas there's times when it's more dangerous and you know when that's coming up and you have to be more prepared for it. Yeah. You can also just sleep and just let that shit happen and then only go out when it's daytime. It's very easy to navigate the game's crafting system. And that's a huge relief. A lot of these survival games, they can make crafting far more complicated than it needs to be. And in a game like Smoke and Sacrifice, where you're dealing with crafting materials that might not make the most sense, or might not feel intuitive, the crafting, the UI plays a big role in making sense of how you put these items together to do what you want. For some instance, you can pick a sour fruit from a sour tree. And if you cook the sour fruit, then you get sour juice, which you can then use on these recipe boards that you will find scattered throughout the world. And it uncovers the secret writing on this. You never in a million years would think to do that if it weren't for how well laid out all the UI is. Yeah. So it's incredibly, incredibly well done. It makes it feel more natural, even though you're dealing with items that may not be intuitive. It also gives you a really good chance to learn your new mechanics and learn how to use the items that you've crafted before it just like throws you into the deep end. Like, here's a boss or some crazy ass puzzle. You can explore around and take your time with it, even though it's a linear story. It also, thank goodness, has manual save terminals. So you can, if you know you're about to go do something that might be a little risky and dumb, then you can take your time, go save, then go do something risky and dumb without having to worry that you're going to lose all your progress between nice. Here and there, which is very helpful. And then there are also fast travel, because it's a huge area that you can explore, and there you can eventually unlock fast travel so that you can zip around a little more easily. There's a trick to that, and it's a puzzle, so I don't want to spoil it, but I absolutely love this game. I thought the story was just incredibly heartbreaking. It's very feel-heavy, and it gets very dark very fast. And the cartoonish art style can kind of throw you off of that until you start playing it. And then I remember the very first few moments when the sacrifice started, and my heart just kind of fell. No. And I was like, look, I've had one rule on this show about games, and that's if it involves kids getting hurt, I can't do it. And I thought, oh shit, what have I signed up for? this was definitely a little more on the difficult to swallow side.
Yeah. Well, overall. That said,
I do still give it a buy it. I thought it was an incredible experience. It's very well done. Some of the animations were a little wonky here and there, but they weren't detracting. Overall, it was just me being picky
little
about
Miss nitpick.
Yeah, it was just like her feet look weird. <You know? laughs> It was just one of those odd things that caught my attention, but I don't think most people would dwell on it the way that I do. but I did just really enjoy the experience, and I look forward to playing more of it, as heartbreaking as it is.
Awesome, sounds good.
So buy it. Go play a good game. Next.
Next up is called The Walking Vegetables, developed by Still Running, published by Merge Games. It released January 23rd on Xbox One for $12.99. It's the 1980s, and an evil alien race has invaded Earth, turning all vegetables into crawling, bawling, mauling abominations. You are about to join Department Radical, the grooviest police force on Earth. Are you a rad enough dude or dame to smite these ravenous creatures? Cole, were you?
I was, and then I got fucking wrecked.
Hooray!
But 'tis the nature of a roguelike.
Yes. But tell us about it.
So this is a top-down twin-stick roguelike shooter. If you've ever played Enter the Gungeon, you're already on par. You know what you're going to be getting into going in here. Except instead of bullet puns, we're looking at a whole lot of 80s references and killer broccoli. There's even one character named the Broccoliath.
Oh, God.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I enjoyed it so much. I tend to roll my eyes at a lot of puns and just be like, come on. But the 80s references and stuff were so good. You get zipped around from level to level in a DeLorean.
Oh, God.
Seriously, the very first line is the police saying, who are we going to call? It's so good. It just like, and it was funny because I was playing it, and number one, she's like sitting beside me, and she just looks so confused. She has no idea what the fuck's going on. She doesn't understand any of the references. It all doesn't make any sense to her, but I am thrilled, and I am giggling at all of it like a fool. So as a roguelite, basically, it's what you're going to expect. You're going to get attacked by an onslaught of enemies in each area that you're in. The way that the Walking Vegetables breaks these up is you have an outdoor area, and then each outdoor area is broken up into a grid. So once you clear one area, you can go north, south, east, or west to go to the next one, whatever is available to you. But in addition to the outdoor areas that you have to clear of the evil vegetables, then you have buildings that are locked, and you can use your keys that you find, to open these buildings and go inside and clear them out as well. There's a risk reward element there. where the buildings are obviously much smaller areas to fight in, and they're still just absolutely packed with, you know, the vegetables that can fuck you up. And there were a couple of times where I would find myself in a position like, okay, I could just go on to the next area, or I only have one heart, or I can try to open up one of these buildings, put that one heart to the test, and maybe walk out of here with something better. One of my favorite aspects of taking down the buildings themselves was that sometimes a ghost will appear, and he's the ghost of Run's past.
Oh, boy.
And he will come up, and he will tell you to spin a little wheel, and you may magically get one of the items you had on a previous run just for free.
Oh, that's cool.
It was so awesome because I would have a run where I'd be like, oh, I got a grenade launcher and I'm killing shit. And I get to a boss and I die like a dumbass because that happens.
In roguelikes, obviously. Plus, it's a hard game.
They are. Yeah, as they are wont to do.
even Carnage is saying that it's a tough game and he's a twin stick pro.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think it was that hard.
Are you taking a shot at Carnage?
I am. Pew, pew, motherfucker. but I don't think it was that difficult to play. I think it's going to be one of those games that's difficult to master. If you're going to want to go through and tell me when you get 1,000, probably never. Because it's difficult to master. I got so excited. I was like, 20 achievements, fucking got this. And then I'm like, I don't think I unlocked any yet.
there's some really tough achievements in this game.
They fall on line of you know, you have a weapon wheel. So you can pick up all kinds of weapons. I don't know even what the actual limit was, because I just kept picking up shit every time I'd play. And I'd be like, oh, I got like 7 weapons. Keep going. I never run out. But there's one for actually going through an entire area without ever using your weapon wheel. That's hard.
Yeah.
Shit. Because you will run out of ammo. You would still be able to press Y and switch back and forth between your pistol and, you know, whatever gun you've most recently picked up, but you wouldn't be able to go, like, if you've got a rocket launcher sitting in your back pocket.
Can't pull that out.
Why wouldn't you have a rocket launcher in your back pocket? So yeah, the achievements are definitely going to be hard as shit. But the game itself, I think it's just one of those where it's fun, but I don't think it's easy once you, or not easy. It's not hard once you get the gist of how it's going to play out. I think the hardest thing with it is just getting a grasp on how the weapons work. Cause there's a lot of different weapons, and you have to take into consideration their spray and how much damage they're going to do. Like you can hit a tomato 2 shots with a sniper rifle, but a pumpkin is only going to take 1. And that's something you've got to keep in mind, because ammo's not free. You have to pick it up off of the ground and stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that was really killing me at first, before I dove into the options, the game does have the VHS scan line look to it.
Yeah.
But you can go into the options and turn that off. And I definitely recommend turning that off.
Yeah, it gets old quick.
So, yeah, even more so. There's every time you fire your weapon, the screen flashes. I don't have epilepsy, but I might have developed it up until the point where I figured out that you could turn that down. You can, it's 100%, you can turn it down by 10s, just turn it off.
The walking vegetable seizure edition from Carnage.
Yeah, he's not wrong. It was definitely an issue. My only other real complaint is that the bosses can be a little bullet spongy. They have some serious time to kill issues there. Again, it's not, their patterns aren't so difficult to make it problematic. It's just that you're sitting there going, okay, are you now?
Are you
going to die?
Now are you dead yet?
and then I did.
Well,
I remember, you know, once you killed it, I was just like, I put the controller down. I was like, I need to break my wrist.
Well, minor gripes aside, $13 on it. What do you think?
It's a steal. It's a really good game. It's really well done. It's funny. I loved it, and you should buy it.
Cool.
And then 1K it for me so that Carnage will shut up.
Oh, God. All right. Next game to talk about is called At Sundown, Shots in the Dark, developed by Mild Beast Games, published by Versus Evil, released January 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, and PS4 for $19.99. At Sundown, Shots in the Dark is a hide-and-seek shooter where maps are covered in darkness and light is your enemy, as four players compete in a deathmatch to be the best. Strategic gameplay is vital in the shadows of this dark world, in which you only become visible when you shoot, dash, or slash. See or be seen, kill or be killed. How long will you survive at sundown? Cole, I'm not sure how much more there is to say about this game, but tell us about it.
There's really not. Like, it's that's it in a nutshell.
It's a four-player deathmatch where you can't see anything unless you shoot or hit a button that makes you visible, and you got to kill each other and win.
Yeah, I keep trying to decide if it's top-down or if it's isometric, and I feel like the camera angle on it is kind of like this hybrid bastardization of both. Like, it's top-down, but it's got a little bit of an angle.
Yeah.
And it can't really decide which one it wants to be. And so I keep sitting here, like, my whole time writing this review and getting ready for this, I keep going, am I going to say it's isometric or am I going to call it top-down? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to say it's a hybrid bastard of both of them.
It's isotop.
Yeah, that'll work. And it just turns the fucking lights out on everything. I think when most people hear multiplayer shooter, the first thing they think of is, like, clear sight lines and passageways, and you're going to run directly into people, and whoever pulls trigger first wins. They got the last part right with this game. Everything else is just fucking pitch dark. There are occasional lit up areas on the map, and you want to avoid them because it will show everybody else where the fuck you are, and then they're going to come and blow your brains out. And they're going to be in the dark, and you're going to die. Joe killed me a lot, is what I'm trying to say.
I did. We killed each other a lot. That's one of the beautiful things about this game, which I love, is we see a lot of these games come out that are couch co-op, local co-op. This has online play, which opens it up big time.
I've really enjoyed playing it online. And I think that the net code on it is really, really strong. Like, we didn't have any problems with, like, this is one of those games where even just, like, a buffer in a microsecond could fuck up your whole game.
Oh yeah.
But the whole time we played, and I've played it since as well, but the whole time I've played it has just been, I pull the trigger and either I hit and they die, or I lose. there's no moments where I pull the trigger and I'm like, well, that was bullshit, nothing happened. It was solid, and there weren't any lag issues. It just felt like if I died, it was because I deserved it. They got me first.
Yeah.
Except you cheated. Fuck that.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
I do think that there's a good variety of play zones as well. There are six different arenas, and each arena has three maps. However, I have one complaint about this. They locked the arenas behind level progression. So you have to play to unlock it. But if you're playing to unlock it, you're stuck with just one or two of the arenas and their three respective maps until you progress some more to unlock some more arenas to get some more maps.
And it takes a while to level up in the game. It's not super quick.
It's made worse by the fact there's not any kind of campaign or anything. There's a training situation you can go through. And yeah, there's achievements for getting gold times on all of those and everything. But even those aren't going to help level you up fast enough to where you're going to just jump into multiplayer and be like, hey, I got all the maps already. Let's play. It's like, no, we're going to be here a while we grind this out until we can get some variety.
Yeah, it would have been nice if everything was open at the start.
We played a lot of, we spent a lot of time in the bushes.
Yes.
That really is my biggest complaint. There's a variety of weapons. There's shotguns, snipers, assault rifles, SMGs. The revolvers have ricochet bullets, which is a little cheeky. there are special weapons and power-ups. You can get shields. I love the claymore that you hated. Because I would just like zip around the whole arena, just ching, 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 and just randomly hitting. And
oh, that thing was so overpowered.
one thing that did bug me too was that most of the gameplay modes are some variant of deathmatch.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of options for how to play the game. And especially when you consider that the beginning of it while you're leveling up and try to unlock more of the arenas, you're kind of just really boxed in. Play deathmatch in the bushes.
Yeah.
You know, there's some really awesome arenas. There's one that's like a nightclub with neon lights and everything. There's a factory with lasers that are moving around. There's some really awesome ways to play this game that are just locked away from you.
Yeah.
And that's a disappointment. I would have liked to have seen some kind of other game modes. A zone control type mode would have been really cool in this, especially where you had to stay hidden, but you want to control the zone. Capture the flag, or even domination, which I think is basically zone control, but just a little more meat with the potatoes would have been nice.
My biggest concern with the game is there going to be a player base online? The $20 price tag is probably going to scare some people away. Carnage in chat has a good point that it would benefit big time if it were on Game Pass, but I don't know how developers could get involved with Game Pass, how they can find out launching. Carnage is saying there is a capture the flag mode, so maybe that's something that has to be unlocked or something that didn't notice.
Or just missed. I know there was the arena and stuff like that, arena mode, but...
Yeah, you were the host, so you got to pick everything online.
Yeah. We were limited, and I was bummed.
Overall,
which was a shame because I had done a lot of the training missions and I had spent quite a bit of time leveling up, and we were still very limited.
Yeah. Overall, though, $20. What do you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. Like you, I'm worried about the longevity of the online. I'd like to see it in Game Pass. Price is a little high, given that how much of it has the content is actually locked behind progression when there's no campaign. But it really is a lot of fun, and I do ultimately give it a try it.
I agree on the try it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's a blast when you have four people playing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be good for parties, or if you can organize an online game with some other people to get together and play it. My biggest concern is the price. I think $15 would have been a lot more palatable, especially when there's the question about player base that we just we won't know about.
Yeah, it's a tough sell to get three of your buddies to pick it up and grind it out with you so that you get shit unlocked enough to actually make the most of your $15. $20. Yeah. It's 20, it's not even 15, but it's a tough sell to get, you know, to get a group to play it with you.
Yeah. Anyway, final game to talk about is called Bombfest, developed by Sudden Event Studios, published by Whitethorn Digital, releasing January 31st on Xbox One for $19.99. Bombfest is an explosive party game, fun for you and up to three friends. Battle in explosive chaotic combat atop wooden forts, on folding chairs, and inside the kitchen sink as you attempt to be the last toy standing. Cole, what is Bombfest?
That again, we are in another situation where there's just not a lot more beyond what's in the summary, which is kind of sad, but it also kind of works for Bombfest. You have four player versus action, with bombs. Surprise.
Shocker.
Yeah. Surprise. We're going to explode the fuck out of everything. It is not online.
No.
Sad face. This is local only. I drug number one into it with me. Thankfully, you can fill it up with bots because I only have so many goddamn controllers in this house that work and that aren't connected to other Xboxes. But I drug number one into it with me. We played against some bots. We had a really good time. You're your goal is basically bombs rain from the sky. Everybody picks a little wooden dowel type character. It's just these little generic wooden dolls, and you can put a costume on it. There's bakers and a minstrel and mail carrier or courier. There's a wizard if you unlock it eventually. There's a few that you unlock as you progress. You start off in an area of the house, and then you have kind of like a ring, but not quite a ring. Imagine you're watching sumo wrestling, and they're trying to get each other out of like the designated area, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what you're going for, a bomb fest, but you're trying to do it with bombs. So you want to throw bombs at each other. Bombs explode, knock somebody else off. Ta-da! You win. And then your child's not amused with you for knocking them off. You want to piss them off extra? Knock them off into the trash can.
Nice.
That's how you hurt your teenager's feelings. It's fun. We enjoyed it. It was a good laugh. But it's, again, short on actual content.
Yeah.
You do play through, like, you can set up how many rounds you're going to play through, and it is kind of like going through a house. There's a lot of different arena types. You can be in a kitchen sink. You can be in a kid's room where there's a train and ring built out of the little wooden blocks, and there's a mahjong table. But once you've been through all the different areas, you're like, okay, well,
what else is there?
Yeah. You start another game after you go through a few rounds. You pick a winner, start another game, and it's the exact same things. And you're like, okay, they wear out their welcome a little quickly. This is one of those that you'll play in a party game, and you'll enjoy it, and you'll have a good time, but you're not going to want to sit and play it for a long time, or the repetitiveness of it starts to kick in. And it becomes a little monotonous and less enjoyable.
It sounds like this is a good compliment on party night with At Sundown.
Yeah. Play At Sundown for a few games. Play a Jackbox game for a little bit. And then start the rotation again.
Yeah.
Rinse, repeat. Yeah, don't spend all your time sitting here playing it, or people are going to leave your party sad. And it's not because it's not a good game. It's just that there's just not enough to keep it going for a long period of time.
No.
Easy to play. Two buttons and you're done. And, you know, you're going to laugh, but you're going to be over it.
Yeah. Well, overall, $20. What do you think?
$20 is a big price tag for this. I don't know how I didn't realize the price tag was that high. I do still give it a try. It's fun, but maybe wait for a sale.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of
seeing like the normal price for games now being $20 for most stuff. Especially limited party games like this, where there's only so much content that you have, and without online, it seems like a bummer.
Yeah, especially without online at $20 is a really tough pill to swallow. And I don't want to deny it on price alone when it is an enjoyable game. It's just that it's not $20 enjoyable.
What would you pay for this? What do you think is a good price for this?
I probably would have said about $8 to $10. That's what I thought you were going to say. And I'm a little surprised. And sad. Like, whoa. Ow. But yeah, I would have definitely said somewhere in the $8 to $10 range. More than $20 for sure.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Be sad. God damn it. Why do we got to go out like this? I had such a good night on reviews, and now all of a sudden it's like, nope, $20, bitch. And I'm like, God.
Hey, still got to try it. It's still a fun game. It's just a bit limited.
Yeah, and it really is enjoyable. I'd like to see them, you know, keep supporting it and maybe add some more arenas and different play areas. You can unlock different types of bombs, and that does help shake things up. But even still, it just wears out its welcome eventually.
Yeah. Oh, well, overall, still a good batch of games that we had on the show.
Yep. No deny it this week, at least for me. And so I'm not mad.
Which is always good. This was a fun show. It was a long one, but it was a fun one. It's been a while since we've had one creeping up on 3 hours, so what are you going to do?
Next week I'll try not to be as mouthy.
Well, that is it for this episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for sticking around and hanging out with us. Thanks again to Tim for coming by chatting Rassles. Thanks to Steve-O for coming by. Yep, Ekibitz. Thanks to Steve-O for coming by and talking about booby slapping. And thanks to Eternal for being my number two.
Yay, I'm poop.
You are the shit. Yay. Do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I think we should have ended it with "you're the shit."